studio, deep within the broadcasting multiplex of CBS Radio. This is the Rick Emerson Show.
Indeed it is.
You are shameless.
That's fantastic.
I am a man without shame. That is true. If you would like to join the Rick Emerson is Shameless Cavalcade, you can always call Dean Snyder if you like. It's 503-222-1011, kids. 503-222-1011. Why, hello there. It's 2 minutes and 38 seconds after the hour of 11, and this is the month of May in the year of our Lord 2007. Thank you for coming by, making it part of your listening day. We are live from the plushly appointed, yet not overly ostentatious studios of AM 970 Solid State Radio. Thank you for coming by. It is Monday, and welcome to day 12. If you'd like to be part of today's program, telephonically speaking, you can call us if you like. It's 503-733-2970. 503-733-2970. You can also email us. It is Rick@RickEmerson.com. Rick@RickEmerson.com. Your comments, your clarifications, your conventions, your 2 cents, your, did I say corrections? Whatever. For any of those things, it's Rick@RickEmerson.com. Or you can call us 503-733-2970. That's 503-P-by-70. And I heard from somebody over the weekend who has a number that is P-by-60. So, see, I'm not the only one who used that phone spell thing. I don't even know what the name of that is. It's not a mnemonic device. It's not an acronym. I don't really know what that is. What is that when you use... Is there a name for that when you're using the words to try to remember a number? I'm wondering aloud to no one in particular here. Never mind.
Don't worry about it.
Don't feel like you have to investigate it. I waited. The best thing just happened. I asked that question out loud, and then I waited just long enough that Tim and Sarah both sort of, like sort of in a befuddled sense, sort of reached towards the on button, wondering as though I was addressing that question to them.
No, I'm trying to get this information about Kansas, and I'm not familiar with the territory, so I keep in thought.
All right.
And there's no way to Google a random question. What about numbers, and you're looking for words?
What is that thing that happens when you do that deal with that guy? Answer. You know, here's something. Here's a truism. This is the truism. And I'm not the first person to point this out. But would you like to know something absolutely true? When you're using Google, no one ever presses the I'm feeling lucky button. Ever.
I bet you press the I'm feeling lucky button.
When is the last time anybody ever went to Google and instead of pressing Google it, pressed I'm feeling lucky? Never. It's never happened. Maybe once, like 3, 4, 5 years ago when you first started using Google.
What does I'm feeling lucky button do?
I don't know. You know why I don't know? Nobody ever presses it.
I'm pressing it now.
I think it just goes to the top results. But to be honest, I can't really say for sure. Is that what it does?
Yeah, because I just typed in Rick Emerson and then I hit I'm feeling lucky and it went to your website.
Bam! So there you go. All right, well, now we know. Question solved. Problem answered. Riddle resolved. It's 503-733-2970. 503-733-2970. Scotty J is postulating on the screen that he thinks the I'm feeling lucky button on Google might be an advanced search. No, Scotty, and that is a stupid guess. It's 503-733-2970. You can also email us. It's Rick@RickEmerson.com with whatever it is you'd like to weigh in on today. I have 3 random observations I'm going to make here at the top of the show. One of these I think I may have made about 6 months ago, but you've probably forgotten anyway, so it's new to you. I have 3 random observations. One. These are three. I came up with these before I saw Carlin on Friday, but having seen Carlin, and we'll get to that in a sec. We'll talk about Carlin. We'll talk about Alice Cooper a little bit. We'll talk about Alison Arngrim. Having seen Carlin, he really is just the unsurpassed master of this, of taking random observations and stringing them together under sort of a heading. So these were all extant in my head last week, but I'm just going to group them together under random crap that occurred to me over the last 5 or 6 days. One. I can't even say this first one. It's too stupid. The only way I can make these observations is by couching them in... This is stuff that's too stupid for me to say seriously. These are jokes that are too retarded for me to use, like, in any actual sort of humor-based sense. So this is just sort of the detritus that accumulates in the floor of my brain. You know what I mean? Have you ever seen those, one of those things they have? Those killing rooms? Like, rendering plants? You go... Or so I'm told... You go into the, not like I make a habit of touring Red Ring plants, but there's that room where they go in and whatever it is you're killing, llamas or whatever. And then they kill them, and then the room slants downward, and then there's just that big drain in the middle to get rid of all the llama juice.
Like in Willy Wonka, the chocolate factory?
Exactly, like the shelling room where Veruca Saul goes down because she's a bad nut. The floor of my brain is kind of like that. It's like a shelling room full of bad nuts.
All right, spit it out. I want to hear what this is.
The floor of my brain has this downward slanting angle to it, and at the bottom is a drain. And then every couple of days, it's like some little gnomes inside my head go down there, and they look through the drain to see what's sort of caught in there, what's sort of stuck around. I have the three following terrible observations. If you are an idiot morning show, feel free to use these. You can have these jokes. This is like public domain. Like sometimes in the production room over here, we'll find public domain music, which means it's music that no one owns the copyright to that you can just use without paying royalties. Like I believe the Star Spangled Banner, Amazing Grace. Amazing Grace is a public domain song. You can play that all day long. Your idiot band can record covers of that all day, never have to pay any royalties. These are public domain observations I'm about to make. Each one more embarrassing than the last.
Okay.
I think Buddhism is stupid, but I'm becoming Zen with it. See what I mean? It occurred to me on Thursday, because my wife was babbling on about Buddhism crap. And I said, Buddhism's just stupid. But I'm Zen with it. Ah! Okay? I believe there ought to be a Norwegian eating utensil called a fjork. A fjork! Ah! With an umlaut over it. Over the O. All right.
And would it be like a F-J-O-R-K?
Yes, it would. F-J-O with an umlaut. R-K. Fjork. That's what they'd eat with in Norway. It's a fjork. All right, finally, this is not so much a joke as it simply is an idea. Isn't there a car called a Sorento? It's like an SUV. Isn't there a thing out there? It's like a mid-sized SUV called a Sorento?
I believe so.
Attention, Rick Nielsen from Cheap Trick. You really ought to be recording a new version of Surrender, but it just goes, Sorento, Sorento, la 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 la. Think about it. It's genius. There you go. That's my third observation. That occurred to me while I was bicycling yesterday. Sorrento.
You want to commercialize one of your favorite songs
of
all time?
It's already been commercialized. They already used it for that stupid Disney commercial. Have you seen that?
Yeah, but they don't teach it to Sorrento.
But, I mean, at least that's retarded and funny. Using Surrender to get fat-ass Americans to go to schlep their idiot kids to Disney World is just depressing. But if they change it to Sorrento, that's kind of funny. And especially because it reminds me of The Simpsons. It reminds me of that Canyonero commercial. There you go. There's your three idiot observations for today. It's 503-733-2970. We'll do introductions and teases here in just a moment. Let's talk to Ben for no randomly discernible reason. Hello, sir.
Hey, Rick. I was just calling to let you know that Google, I'm feeling lucky. You used to be able to type in failure, and it would bring up the White House webpage.
Yeah, somebody told me that. That's called Google bombing, because what they do is there's guys out there with a lot of time on their hands, and they will just go ahead and they will link results in such a fashion so that certain phrases return certain results. And yeah, you could type in like moron or whatever, and it would like bring up the George Bush page or something. Yeah.
Yeah, it doesn't look like it works anymore, but
No, that's a little bit of fun that's been taken away from us, I think, as Google and the White House caught on to that. All right. Did you have anything else today, sir?
No, that's about it.
All right, thank you.
Thanks.
There you go. All right. 503-733-2970. What do we got coming up today? We got CNN radio correspondent Jim Roop. We had to lie to CNN today. First of all, CNN asked if we wanted to talk to somebody about this tornado that apparently wiped out an entire town in Kansas. And I passed
on
that.
You don't want to talk about the tornadoes in Kansas?
You know, you really got her tone of voice down. Laura Cabeza. You mean you don't want to talk about the single biggest story of the day, you Philistines? No, I don't. I mean, we'll talk about it a little bit, but I don't really care. Look, it would be wrong of me to wait, because it's Amanda Moyer that they've got. Moyer? It's Amanda Moyer who's sitting there in Greensburg, I guess what used to be Greensburg, Kansas, or whatever the hell that town is. And it would be wrong of me to take her valuable time just so I could make stupid observations. If I gave that the town is gone, what am I going to observe? What am I going to say about the city? It doesn't exist anymore. So Tim will have a little bit of business on the Tonight Show, and that'll be the end of that. Jim Roop will be joining us from Los Angeles. I have lied to CNN and said that I wish to talk about the Los Angeles Police Department and the immigration rally. I don't really care about either of those things, but I do care about Paris Hilton, specifically about Paris Hilton being savagely beaten her first night in prison, which I mean, I know I haven't lived a good life. And I know I haven't, I'm not necessarily a good man, but I would like to think that the good Lord Jesus would grant me just this one small favor and just have Paris Hilton just savagely pummeled her first night in lockup. I'm not even sure she's going to solitary confinement. I think she might be in what they refer to on Oz as gen pop, which means that she, I mean, there's, I would say she's in general population. I would say there are even odds, as a sports book would say, there are even odds that she might have her legs broken the first day. Oh. Just gives me a little tingle just to think about it. So we'll talk to Jim Roop and see if I can pump any Paris Hilton information out of him. And then Lisa Goddard will be joining us from the Hill today. We will recap her exciting the moments on Friday, speaking with Alison Arngrim. Also, we'll find out if she got that listener, you know, that greeting we filmed for her at the listener party, sort of Jack Black style, where we filmed the whole, you know, what, 1,000 drunken maniacs chanting Lisa, Lisa, Lisa. So we'll see if she got that. We sent the DVD out like 10 days ago. She's been on vacation for a while. I do believe she will have received it by now. So we'll look into that. What else do we have coming up today? You know, we have a story. I mean, Tim has sound on this story, too. I'm not even going to say what it is. I'm just going to say, I mean, words like awful, horrifying, good God Almighty, sweet zombie Jesus, please don't let this be true. I mean, this story is so horrifying. This story is so gut-wrenching. This story is so unbelievably disturbing.
It's worse than the back door to the front door.
Well, it all depends. This story is so terrible that Tim will have this story today, and he will also have sound on it, and then I'm going to bring it back later in the show as one of the competitors for second worst story in the history of the world. It's so bad, even having Tim report it later on in the show will not dilute its impact later on. So we're going to do that today. It's off the charts horrifying. It's so horrifying that there are almost no words to describe it. And what makes it fantastic, and by fantastic I mean terrible, this story, is that it's terrible and awful and horrible. What is it? That terrible, awful, no good, very bad? What is that? That children's book? Whatever. Anyway, it's terrible in a completely different way than all the others. Because the other ones, like, guy gets his junk cut on a buzzsaw. Somebody staples his hand to, like, you know, to something else. You know, guy gets gored by a rhino. This story, you know, that woman has the episiotomy that goes all wrong. And the back door becomes the front door. Or sort of one middle door, I guess, between the two. This story is horrifying in a completely different way. So we'll get to it later on. What else? Paris Hilton goes to jail. Indiana Jones news again. Let's see. What else do we have here? Spider-Man sucks, but everybody goes to see it anyway. And, well, and various other things. We may or may not have Peter Kernlith today. I'm unclear about that. So we'll, I don't know, we'll find out about that here in just a skosh, as our Azen friends say. 503-733-2970. We'll get to some of these phone calls that are coming in here in a bit. We'll talk to Tim Riley in just a second. We are joined today, as are we always, by the lovely and talented Sarah S. Dillon. Why, how are you today?
I'm good. My arm hurts.
Now, I want to say first and foremost that every time Sarah is picking, every time you've opened the door today, every time you've adjusted the microphone, every time you've lifted your hand to pick up a pencil, you're wincing and making this weird auditory groan of pain, which doesn't get old, by the way. It's hilarious every time you do it. Would you like to share?
It always catches me off guard.
Would you like to share with the people why your arm hurts?
Yeah, I went shooting yesterday.
Okay, but you have to clarify exactly what kind of shooting you were doing. This wasn't like you with the just like a target pistol.
No, we went out into the mountains past Estacada and shot AK-47s.
Now, is that before we go any further, is that actually even legal?
I believe so. I asked my friend Bart, who took me. And
Bart
said it was.
Sounds like a knowledgeable guy. Bart sounds like a guy who does know guns.
You've met Bart. Yeah, he has an arsenal. It's unnerving.
That's something you want to announce on the air. Attention, viewer of alcohol, tobacco, and firearms. Bart has an arsenal.
Yeah, it was scary. We had, we brought a bunch of stuff to shoot at and had shotguns and a couple AK-47s, the SKS, and a 9mm.
See, I'm not really sure that you can own an AK-47. That's the thing.
You can. The version that he has, you can.
Uh-huh. That's always a phrase that shows up in the search warrant, by the way, before he end, before Bart dies in a fiery standoff with Janet Reno. We had it on good authority that he had an arsenal.
Well, and I've never been out in the middle of the woods shooting. Like, the only time I had shot before was out on, like, a farm, and you don't hear a lot of the people. And you're up on the top of this mountain, and you hear gunshots and gunfire in the distance, like, every direction. It's really freaky.
All right.
And so I went shooting, and my arm is killing me.
There's a great... What is that photo on your MySpace? Is that you with the AK-47?
Yeah.
All right. So you go to Sarah's MySpace. It's just myspace.com/SarahXDillon. And there's a great photo of her holding an AK-47, which is fantastic. Is your arm all bruised up?
Not yet. It just really hurt.
Yeah.
And it was scary. There's some dude next to us in full-on military fatigues, and he was wearing like a stocking cap over his face with only the eye holes cut out, and he had a semi-automatic like gun.
Did he have a scary... Did he have a shirt that said CBS Engineering Department?
Oh, man. And he was laying on the ground, and his friend was like, get lower to the ground! And they looked like they were training for something. I'm like, oh, I want to get out of here so bad.
Did he have a lot of other guys following him around, calling him Führer? Was he... Did it look like he spent most of his time living in an Airstream trailer?
Oh, it was really weird. They were laying on their stomachs and, like, had their guns, and they had this full-on, like, target range thing set up.
Yeah. All right, then.
I just didn't want to make eye contact.
Oh, this was... These calls right now, these are going to be people talking about whether it's legal to be shooting an AK-47. We'll wait to resolve that issue just a minute. Here's Tim Riley working on the following stories for your edification today.
So we have just received word that David Hasselhoff...
Your microphone is off.
Oh.
Why, hello.
We just received word that David Hasselhoff has been suspended by L.A. County Superior Court from visiting his kids.
Good for them. Well done.
Also, for those who watch Extreme Makeover, the home edition, the star Ty Pennington arrested over the weekend for DUI.
Bam!
Paris Hilton sentenced to the simple life of 45 days in the pokey and fires her publicist.
Fantastic.
Malala High School teens may get prison for making classmates quack like ducks, croak like frogs, lick pudding off knees, and poking posteriors in Hazing's Gone Wild.
Poking posteriors.
Pudding off knees?
Right inside his posterior. All right, fantastic. All right, by the way, I would like to introduce... Well, never mind. You know, that's one of those things that I was opening my mouth to do. And I'm going to stop. I'm going to stop it right now. Maybe I'll do it later on. All right, 503-733-2970. Let's see. What else? Well, let me get these calls here, and then we'll talk about some other crap. Let's see. Hi, you're on the Rick Emerson Show. How can I help you?
Well, Rick, you know that little town is supposedly totally destroyed in Kansas?
Yeah.
It's not totally destroyed.
Is this the setup to a joke?
Yes, it is.
Uh-huh. Do you really want to make a joke? Here's what we're going to do, sir. We're going to give you a second just to think about it. Just to ponder for a moment whether you really want to joke about this town that's been destroyed by eternity. You just hang on. Don't. All right. Now, how do you feel about this joke now, sir?
What joke? What are we talking about?
You were setting up to a punchline, sir.
Oh, no, sir. No, I wasn't. No, not at all. Never,
I swear to God, you just
happened.
Said you were.
No, I think you reconsidered.
Oh, are you backing out of it now?
Yeah.
Have you reconsidered?
Absolutely.
All right. Thank you. Thank you. There you go. See? For once it worked, and we avoided some sort... I avoided getting some sort of terse memo for the Human Relations Department here. Speaking of which, should we all take our tolerance and diversity training over the weekend?
I told today, right?
Well, supposed to have been done by today, but that's okay. Rick Emerson will look the other way. You got
to...
I
need to get that phone number from you again so I can unlock the thing. Tim gave it to me and I left it.
Tim give you the phone number?
That's at my house.
I don't think I have it anymore.
I don't have it anymore.
Looks like you're screwed.
Uh-oh.
Oh, well. Anywho.
Well, you'll never learn about our diverse workplace.
You'll never learn why it's...
Yes. So many ethnicities are represented at CBS Radio.
Mm-hmm.
White.
There's a... Let's see, you got your white...
Well,
you're alabaster, you're pale, and you're cracker. Also you're honky. And the man. Those are all. We represent all shades of whiteness here at CBS. CBS is a welcoming environment for all kinds of white people. White people from every background. White people from every culture.
Well, this training's about hurting the feelings of white people. and how to avoid doing so.
Well, you know. let's see here. Hi, Nick. You're on the Rick Emerson Show. Hello.
Hey, what's up, Rick?
What's up?
No, but, hey, yeah, you can have any assault rifle as long as it's semi-automatic.
Now, is this a semi-automatic?
No. There was some dude next to me, though, that had one, and it was full-on to the right away.
Well, no, no,
wait, there was, like, full-automatic, like,
What I mean is, you have to pull the trigger every time to shoot it, or could you hold down the trigger?
No, I had to pull, I just pull it every time.
Oh, okay, well, that's fine, then, because that's a semi-automatic, yeah. A full automatic is where you just pull the trigger and hold it down, and it goes, and just goes through the whole clip. All right, excellent. All right, thank you, Nick.
No problem.
There you go. That's like if you go to rickemerson.com, you can see the... whatever, you can see the video clip from when Paul Halama and I went up to the Tillamook Burn with Fairly Honest Don, of Fairly Honest Don's machine gun parlor. That guy had fully automatic machine guns, and he was one of the, I think he was the only guy who was, at the time, licensed to deal those in Oregon. Which is just, I mean, and that's a weird sensation. You just hold down the trigger and it goes for like 1,000 rounds or whatever in just like 14 seconds. I mean, it was unreal.
Well, the AK-47, like, you can, you know, hit the trigger really, very yeah. quickly, and it's just like, bam, 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 bam. It sounds, like a crazy person holding that thing.
Well, here's the really weird thing, and then we'll talk a little bit about some other crap, and we'll get these calls and so forth. The weird thing about going shooting with people, and again, I'm not anti-gun at all. I don't own a gun, but that's because I would kill someone with it. So, but I, you know, but the thing is, I, unlike most crazy gun people, I recognize that. I am aware that I am not responsible enough to own a gun, so I decide it is my choice not to.
Yeah, I could never own one.
Yeah, because I... No, seriously, somebody would cross me, and man, that'd be one dead guy, and I'd be in prison. So that's why I don't own a gun, because I'd use it. The weird thing about when you go shooting with somebody, and this I had this sensation when I was up with Paul Halama and Fairly, not that I'm saying Paul Halama is a psychopath, but I'm saying any, you know...
You have to go with people you trust.
Well, that's the thing. And I totally trusted him, but it is a weird sensation because the three of us are standing up there, four of us rather, me and these three and Paul and Don and Paul's cousin, I think it was, and there's like four of us up there. And we have like a fully automatic Uzi submachine gun. I mean, that's like an Uzi 9mm like Arnold Schwarzenegger has in The Terminator. And, you know, we're firing into a dirt hill or whatever, and it's just, you know, and it's, I mean, it's firing hundreds of rounds a second. And Paul Halama at one point is standing a few feet in front of me, aiming at a hill, holding his Uzi, and he's all, and just going through the whole thing. And you do have the sensation that,
Paul
like...
Paul Halama has crazy eyes.
That's Sarah Dillon who said that.
Oh, you know I love Paul, but he does.
He'll kill you first. I like you, Sarah. That's why I kill you first. But you do have the sensation of, like, if any one of these people decided to kill me, they could just do it right now.
Mm-hmm.
And then this is the other thing. Then when you're firing the gun, it goes through your head, too. You're like, I could take out all of these people right now if I wanted to. You know, and then you don't because you're not crazy. But you do have that weird sense. I remember, like, being at that, I think it's just called the gun store or whatever it is in Vegas, that place where I fired that Thompson submachine gun. And the guy's down there, he's, like, training me how to use it. And it is like a weird sense of trust because the guy was training me how to use use that Thompson submachine gun. And I had this realization, I'm like, you know, anybody could come in here and just get it and just go nuts. So it is kind of like this weird agreement that we all have with each other not to go crazy at those moments.
Well, it's weird when you have, you know, when you finally look at a weapon as a weapon. Like, there's this one point, we were all up on the top of the mountain, there's nobody else up there. All of a sudden, we hear these three four-wheelers coming up.
Yeah.
And it's these guys, and they're full-on head-to-toe dressed in black, and they have gloves on, they have face masks on, they have sunglasses over. You can't see a damn thing about them. And they pull up, and, you know, I was getting really freaked out. I'm like, we're in the middle of nowhere.
Totally.
And I looked behind me, you know, and there are like 10 guns behind me. I'm like, we've got weapons. And it was kind of a weird sensation when I'm like,
totally.
There's a weapon behind me if this, you know, if these dudes try to mess with us.
Totally.
Oh, it was scary. Being in the hills in Estacada is a scary thing.
Being in Estacada is a scary thing, period. But, you know, hearing the theme from Red Dawn playing in your head. Steve, you're on the Rick Emerson Show. Why, hello.
Hey, Rick and guys, how you doing?
What's up?
Hey, I'll bet Sarah had a great time doing that. I wanted to ask Sarah if she knew, this is a serious question, if she knows that gun range in Estacada would allow black powder or cannons or anything like that.
You mean like a musket?
There was some dude next to me shooting a musket.
Really?
Oh, very cool.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, and actually, I just got a MySpace message from him, which is, I was like, were you at a shooting range yesterday? Yeah, he had a full musket, and he had a little ball, and he'd pack it. And
he recognized you?
Yeah.
That's kind of weird that a guy would recognize you. That's, think about it. I mean, not that we're like big, you know, stars or anything, but I mean, it would be, imagine that. It's got to be weird from that guy's perspective. He's at a gun range, and he looks over, and there's Sarah Dillon firing an AK-47.
It's not even a gun range. It's just like pulling off to the side of the road, and we're in like this gravel.
just
random. Yeah.
And later, she'll have a vodka tonic with extra lime.
Yeah.
But,
not beforehand, though.
Well, because the reason I ask is because I belong to a fire reenactment group, and we have cannons, and we're looking for a place to fire them, to actually shoot them. So I was just wondering if you
I don't really know that it's... I don't know that he's legal as such, but people were apparently doing it there and no one got arrested. So draw from that what you will.
Yeah, does she know the name of the range?
I don't think it was a range. I think it was just a ditch somewhere.
Actually, the guy sent me, you know... He sent me the name of the thing, and I can't find it.
Well, you know what? Send her an email, and she figures out maybe she'll let you know via email or something.
Well, that would be great. Right, thanks,
thank
guys.
You. And Kathy, you're on the Rick Emerson Show. Hi.
Hi.
Hey.
And I can't believe I also have a picture of me with a on my MySpace page shooting an AK-47, but it was a fully automatic, and that thing just, it was like a Tommy gun, and it just, things shot up all over the place.
Fantastic. Yeah, it's a great sensation. It really is.
Yeah, a little bit, but we were shooting out in the middle of somewhere up in Washington, up in the hills, and I never thought I'd hear another person. I don't think it's legal to shoot them. I mean, are they?
You know, I don't know. When was this?
This was about 3 years ago.
I don't know. But I know after 9/11, it kind of changed a lot. But I don't know that it's legal to be firing a fully automatic weapon unless you're a dealer. No.
Well, the tree that we were shooting at is definitely not there anymore.
No, no. All right. Excellent. Well, that's fantastic. Yeah, I'm all for pictures of chicks firing machine guns. All right. Thank you.
All right. There you go. That's Kathy. All right.
503-733-2970. Let's see. Well, we should make a couple observations here. We'll talk a little bit later about the Allison Arngram show at CC Slaughter's, which I did not go to. We sort of, our show kind of split the difference between all of the various events in Portland on Friday. So you went to see Against Me, right? That was your deal?
Oh, and I also dropped my phone in a beer on Friday.
Fantastic.
Yeah,
well done.
That was awesome. And you know what?
Little delayed karma?
No, come to find out, it dries out and works.
Really?
Yeah.
Did you have to put it in alcohol, or did you let it dry by itself?
Yes, I dunked it in a thing of water. No, I didn't. It dried out by itself. I took it apart and took out the battery and left it alone for 2 days. And...
Well, that's no fair. Mine did. I just, like, just spilled some coffee on mine, and it was just disintegrated.
Yeah, I full-on dunked it in there. It fell into...
Did you feel like a moron?
I did.
Because that's when I drop mine into a cup of coffee. And then I did the Homer Simpson thing of putting my hand in after it and like, no! You know, and it's just, yeah, you're just like the dumbest feeling on earth.
Well, I was just supposed to drop it. My friend Kyle left his beer under my chair and I didn't notice. Yeah. So it slipped out of my hand and fell into Kyle's beer. Like,
good times. All right.
But, yeah, it works now.
So you went to see Against Me, and then I went to see, and then I saw George Carlin on Friday, which was, and by the way, I met some listeners there, some guy, Jason, and some other dudes whose names I have now forgotten, trying not to think of me as an ass. Which was fantastic. I mean, let me just say for one thing, though, I don't know this deal of Carlin going out with terrible opening acts. He's just got the worst. Every time I've seen George Carlin, he has the worst. And maybe it's by design. Maybe it's like swinging three bats in the on-deck circle or something.
Did it make him look better, at least?
Well, yeah. I mean, not that he needed it to look better.
Sorry, that was me.
Everything stopped. I don't know what's going on.
Keep going. It's okay.
It's freaking me out.
Hang on.
There we go. Well, now my whole rhythm is blown. Well, whatever.
All right, Carlin.
Well, I'll talk later. We'll talk about it later. It's 503-733-2970. I got this other stuff to get to, but we're running a little behind here. We got to get Lisa Goddard around the corner, et cetera, and so on. It's 503-733-2970. Lisa Goddard coming up next. Jim Roop later on. Tim Riley at the AM 970 noon news desk at noon, of course. And possibly Peter Carlin for the Oregonian coming up later on. Top five, et cetera. Stay there. It's the Rick Emerson Show. The Rick Emerson Show, 503-733-2970. Thanks for coming by. Coming up later on, Tim Riley at the Ministry of Truth. The hell else we have coming up today? We got to work on the second stanza of the Portland. So we get the first. I'm unclear about what a stanza even is. I keep saying that, but I realize that I'm just sort of making that term up. I'm using it without even really knowing what it means.
What, stanza?
Stanza. I say stanza thinking that it means the first two couplets, the first four lines. But you know, I'm not even really sure about that. I could just be pulling that out of my ass. I really don't know. So in any event, we got the first four lines of the Portland song. We're going to work on the next, whatever, the next set of lines. And just, I was at Safeway last night buying my weekly supply of spray cheese. And this guy, the guy Roger, is that his name? Roger? Robert?
Robert.
Robert. But I was a checker at Safeway, and he's, you know, he's checked me out and he recognized me. He was, how's that Portland song going? And he apparently was the guy who had originally suggested to kind of doing it like my favorite things. So here's the thing. You can go to rickemerson.com. You can see the first four lines of the Portland anthem, which are now extant. They are now there. The key is to try to not make the whole thing a knockoff, because we don't have a melody yet. So the key is to not make the whole thing a knockoff of my favorite things from The Sound of Music. But use those four. We have the first four lines, and just use those as sort of like a guidepost when working on the next four. So you can go to rickemerson.com, and you can see that as well. Let's, before we do anything else here.
David Cassidy, you know what else to say, except...
I thought we were getting a shorter version of this.
No, we got a longer one.
Scotty, please summon him to the studio.
Beam us up, Scotty.
End of message.
Now, welcome to the Rick Emerson Show. Scotty J., our intrepid PA. Hello, and happy Monday to you.
Good morning.
Hi, how are you
Scotty
today?
J.?
Hey, was that Lisa Goddard who called a couple minutes ago?
When I answered it, it was blank.
All right, okay. So, she's actually not supposed to be on for a couple minutes anyway, so...
I did put a short... In your
is there a shorter version
there
of that?
There is.
What is it called?
David Cassidy, Scotty J. Short.
Are you sure about that?
Yes.
You know, it's not.
I hope it's not an MP3.
I'm looking.
I do that every
it's,
time.
It's not here.
It's no. Okay, I'll fix it.
The only one that's here is the one that says too long. This is the one that's like 48 seconds. So you have to go back and look at that again. How was your weekend? Was it satisfying?
That was awesome.
I just want to answer the audience's questions right now. How many cigarettes did you have over the weekend?
I've been smoking full on. What can I say?
Thank you so much.
There you go.
At least just embrace it. Just be honest about it and just give up this fiction that you're ever going to quit.
No, I wouldn't say ever or never or any of those
words. You're not
going
to quit. Given now, you're not going to quit. You're going to be weak-willed and riddled with tumors.
I'll agree. I'm weak-willed about it right now because I don't have enough desire to stop.
That's what it is. How long have you been smoking?
On and off, you know, for like 20 years.
Like 20 years. So
I say like because there was a time when I quit for 3 years, and why ever pick it back up? Stupid, but
yeah. So what is it exactly? And I don't want to dwell on this because you're just zen with the fact that you're not going to quit smoking ever. So my question to you is, well, no, because you say that you don't have the willpower now. I don't want to spend a lot of time on this because I've written you off, frankly. So we've accepted the fact.
I just respect Scotty, but now he's just being honest with us.
No, but I don't think that's true because he's still clinging to this idea that he's going to quit someday. Right. My whole thing is if you don't ever plan to quit, if you just plan to smoke until you're fine.
It's time to quit.
Yeah, but you're not going
to
quit.
I think it's too late for him now.
That's what I'm saying. You're like 40. The damage is probably irreversible.
That's
BS. Nothing is going to. You're not going to be able to change
it. Get well.
No, it's not going to. But see, that's if you quit smoking. See, now we're getting the whole argument again, which I don't want to have. But that if you quit smoking, which you're clearly not going to do, so you.
I wouldn't say clearly.
You quit for 2 days.
I quit for 7 days.
You quit. All right, it's time to get your children on the phone. That's what's gonna have to happen.
That
daddy,
a chain smoker.
The other children have two parents. That's what you're gonna be hearing someday. Well, you won't be hearing it.
Yeah. Will you come visit me?
As the children are standing above you in the cancer ward. So, all right. So, that's not even what I brought you in. What did I even bring you in to ask?
I don't know. Save it for later. I mean, I'd like to talk about anything but cigarettes.
Well,
right
that's because you can't. That's because.
So, would you ever be comfortable with us having your children on the air?
I don't know.
Well, we'll start with Mrs. J, and then we'll work our way down to the little J's. So, all right. So you are back to what is full on smoking?
Pack after pack.
But seriously, on a given
a pack a day?
3/4 of a pack.
So like 15 a day. More
probably, yeah.
All right, so you smoke about 15 cigarettes a day.
Yeah, but they're ultralight. But that doesn't matter.
They're ultra.
They're full of more chemicals.
All the difference in the world. Yeah, absolutely. Okay. Hey, you see Carlin?
Yes, I did. It was great.
Because I got this email. Listen to this. And then we'll get Lisa Goddard here in a second. Rick, Scotty and his crew of hooligans. Was it you and your boys? Was that it? You and your peeps?
This guy
says, Scotty and his crew of hooligans were sitting in front of us. They stayed for the comedian that sucked, and then they left right before Carlin came on. What's up?
Yeah, we were in a different seat.
Oh, you moved. Okay, you moved somewhere else. So you did stay for Carlin.
Yeah, oh, yeah, it was great.
Right, because that opening guy was an ass. That opening guy.
What was his name?
I laughed a little bit, but not.
It was like Eric Litzarelli or Litzenstein or Litzelli or something. There was like an L and a T.
He had a couple of funny.
It was terrible. He was terrible. I wanted a second of it. I thought he was one of the worst comedians I have ever. Here's the thing, and I don't mean to go on and on because we got Lisa Goddard to get through here, but here's the thing about comics. Well, everybody knows my stance is that I typically hate comics and comedians, and that's why Carlin is so great, because he's one of the exceptions that proves the rule. Very rarely is there a comedian that really kind of breaks the mold and stands out to me as somebody who's legitimately sincerely funny. I would say right now, as far as big name comics, Carlin is still there. I would say Chris Rock is really sincerely, legitimately funny. Who is that guy? The guy that's dead now. The guy that overdosed in the hotel room.
Mitch Hedberg.
Mitch Hedberg. He was pretty funny.
He was hilarious.
He was kind of a funny guy. And there just aren't a whole lot of people. I mean, I hate to sound like an old guy, but I mean, it's just, you know, the comedians. I mean, Sam Kinison was really great. He was doing his own thing. Richard Pryor was really funny. I never really found Lenny Bruce to be all that great. But there's so few comedians at any given moment. But the thing about comedians is it's hard to be kind of an abrasive, obnoxious, aggressive comedian without just coming off as just like a dick. You know what I mean? And Carlin can do it because he's just got it to an art form. Carlin can thread that needle so well. Like, you know, his opening line. He comes out on stage, and his opening line, which will not be funny when I do it, but was hilarious when he did it, he comes out and he's like, I would just like to start by saying F Lance Armstrong. And then he went on this whole thing about F him in his blank and F him in his... F him right in
That's the thing. It was F all night long.
F,
you know?
F him right in his cancer is what he said. And then he did this, which is a great monologue about how he's tired of being told who to... He said, I'm tired of being told who my heroes ought to be. He said, I'm tired of being told who I have to admire. And it was great. It was classic Carlin abrasion. Worked right into sort of a societal rant. But that guy before him was just like a jerk, and I kept wishing that people would rush the stage and beat him to death, and it didn't happen. All right, well, we'll talk more later. Thank you, Scotty. Go have a cigarette. All right, let's welcome now to the Rick Emerson Show. From the Hill, CNN radio correspondent to the stars, fashionably attired as always, Lisa Goddard. Why, hello. How are you today on this fine Monday? How was your weekend? How was your week off?
I was in Atlanta training. So it was all...
Now, can you tell us what you were training for?
Yeah, we've got new radio equipment, new wacky radio equipment.
I don't mean to cast aspersions, but how, I mean, it's just radio equipment. How difficult could it be?
You know, our CNN radio, you can, Castro & Pinion has decided we had three options for new ways of gathering sound. Our bosses also gathered our opinion, and in the end, decided to give each of us all three. So,
all right, then.
Yeah, so we have to train on these three different things. I was happy with what I had before.
Well, you know, I've learned to never turn up my nose at new equipment.
That's the thing. I'm a bit of a fuddy-duddy.
Well, you're a bit of a Luddite.
You could say.
All right. Hey, before we go any further with this, so I have to ask you now, I mean CBS Radio Portland marketing guru Susan Reynolds put something in the mail for you a while back. Have you received that yet?
Yes, I just got it. And I couldn't believe it. I was delighted. Everyone in the crowd at the 10th anniversary... Just got to say, I wish I had been there. I would have bought you guys all drinks.
Ah, well, thank you so much. I think they would have been consumed.
I couldn't believe it.
They would have been, those drinks would have been consumed by Jim Roop, because that was sort of his... He was sort of a...
Yeah, he was like triple fisting at one point.
He was a bottomless pit of alcohol. There was... I don't think it's on that video, but the greatest moment of the night, Roop-wise, well, there are two. One is... And I can tell this now because I want to give it away while we were still waiting for the video. And people don't know what we're talking about. At Listener Party 10, which was a few weeks ago,
right.
Roop was there, but we did this greeting that we filmed for Lisa. Because, you know, he was disappointed that you weren't able to be there, and, you know, whatever. And so we did this whole greeting in front of the crowd, and the crowd just spontaneously started up with, you know, it was like 900 lunatics chanting your name over and
it's
over again.
Amazing, yes. I don't know. I hope I can return the favor for each of them. I'll just chant their, just me chanting each listener's name.
One by one, stick request.
Cool, it was pretty awesome.
There was this great Roop moment where I swear to God, he had a gin and tonic in each hand. And then was like cradling a beer like in the crook of his right elbow, and then had the microphone in the crook of his left elbow, and was standing on stage weaving, but sort of listing like 30 degrees to starboard, just desperately trying to stay upright. And the other great Jim Roop moment for that night was there was a green room sort of down at the bottom of some stairs. So you would get off stage, you'd take a right. And then there was a long staircase that went down to a sort of basement room. And at the bottom of the staircase, Susan Reynolds and I, at one point, we were standing at the top of the staircase talking about something or other. And we looked down at the bottom of the staircase, and Jim Roop is down there with one of these It's like a big cardboard tube, like the kind that you roll up a poster inside of.
Okay.
We look down at the bottom of the staircase, and Jim Roop has got the big poster tube to his mouth, and is just sort of whistling through it like a makeshift, like an ad hoc trumpet, and sort of blowing a tune through it to no one. And then he attempts to walk forward, and instead just trips and plows right into a wall and tips over. And that's when we just sort of walked away, because we figured the picture was so comedically perfect that there was no point in watching him any further. That was really the Jim Roop highlight of the trip for me. So
that is outstanding. So I have to tell you, I'm still basking in the sunlight of Friday's conversation with us.
Allison Arngrim.
Yeah.
And so I hope we didn't. Had we talked to you in advance about doing that? I think we had. I hope we didn't catch off guard.
It was funny because actually Sarah called me a little bit before, and then I was waiting. The funny thing was, if there was a moment where anything needed to, where there was a pause, I was going to bring up, but there never was. It was such a fantastic conversation. The fact that while I was doing that, sitting next to me in my car was fiancé Jason Sporbert, blindfolded, bizarrely.
So that's how it is.
It's a very odd combination of events going on at that particular moment.
Should I just make up my own reason why he was blindfolded?
Perhaps it'd be more interesting for people, but no, the deal is it was his big, all his guy buddies had their big bachelor weekend for him, and he didn't know that it was that weekend. He also didn't know where they were going, so I was to drive him to the airport, and so I kind of blindfolded him so I wouldn't know what was going on, and meanwhile, he's blindfolded. All of a sudden, I'm talking to Nellie Olson. And that's what he's listening to for his clues as to what his future entails.
This is so confusing.
I'm
so confused. Didn't he realize, wouldn't he figure out he was in an airport when he heard, airplanes?
Well, clearly, but I picked him up from his office, and he didn't know exactly what was happening. I said, hey, you got to get in the car, get this blindfold on, you're going somewhere. I packed his bag, all that stuff. He didn't know his bag was packed, all that kind of stuff.
Is he still at the bachelor thing, or was it a weekend only thing?
It was a weekend only. They ended up, they went to the Kentucky Derby.
Ah, I see. Yeah. All right, where the liquor flows freely.
That's precisely their thinking.
Excellent. Well, I'm glad that we got to patch you in with Allison Arngrim. She was really, really great. She was fantastic, and apparently I did not go to her one-woman show. My wife went and said it was great. So it may be coming to your town.
I'm going to look for it. She was outstanding. I said, she can't possibly really want to talk about Little House any more than she already has in her entire life. But she's still hilarious and great about it.
And you know what? And I think I didn't really get it. Our time with her was necessarily sort of limited because there was other places she had to be and whatnot. But I think my speculation is that, and I don't know this for sure, but I think if you're a celebrity like that, I think you sort of, we found this with Tina Yathers from Family Ties, where you kind of go through a bell curve, where, you do a lot of interviews, and you know, people want to talk to you because you're Nellie Olson and whatever, and you're sort of great with it, and then you kind of get to that point in your life where you're like, well, F this, like, I'm tired of being Nellie Olson, I want to sing, I want to dance, I want to be on Broadway, I want to be a Nobel Prize-winning scientist, and then after a while, though, you just become zen, and you sort of embrace the fact that you're Nellie Olson, and I mean, you know, as we're getting to no real news here, but that's okay. Sarah and I, a few months ago, were at a local music venue here, and we were introducing some 80s rock bands. There's this band called L.A. Guns, and there's another band called the Bullet Boys, who were both real, big when I was in high school. And it was sort of some hair metal era bands.
Excellent.
And this guy from the Bullet Boys, this guy called, his name is Mark Torine, I think his name is. But anyway, the lead singer for the Bullet Boys was telling, he was real drunk and stoned for one thing, just as high as a paper kite. I mean, he clearly had no idea where he was. Like, there's a guy who puts him on a plane. There's a guy who gets him off the plane. He goes on stage, has no idea what city he's in. But he's on stage, and he's telling this drunken story about his now ex-wife and about how his ex-wife at one point had told him that he was a has-been. And his response to her, which I thought was great, and which Sarah thought was great, his response to
That's my MySpace.
Yeah, and his response was, I would rather be a has-been than a never-was. And I think at a certain point, if you're like Allison Arngrim, Nellie Olson, you just sort of accept the fact that some people never get a chance to be famous on any level. And right. If you do, you got to just grab it and just be happy that you had it. You know what I mean?
And work with it. Yeah, that's outstanding.
So, I guess this is actually the thing we're supposed to be talking about. I don't really care about Queen Elizabeth II, except to say, first of all, She seems like a singularly unpleasant woman, and I don't pretend to know anything about her, but I mean, don't you just get that vibe off her, that she's just sort of a squinched up, just sort of miserable personality? I mean, maybe I'm wrong. But
I get the vibe that she just is not allowed to show anything other than she's got the one, she's a one-note Sally. She is probably in her mind, I would imagine, dignity is what she is going for, but here in America, it just comes off as a little pull up the back there.
And you say that she's not allowed to show that, but I mean, this is 2000.
Or she wasn't reared to show that. I don't know.
I was going
to
say, because let's be honest, this is 2007. She doesn't matter. I mean, and I don't mean that to be cruel. I'm just saying they are no longer a monarchy in a sort of political sense. I mean, really, right? She doesn't have any. She has no political authority, does she?
You could say she has political influence. I would, like, if she came out and made a statement against the Iraq War, it would certainly have meaning, but it wouldn't necessarily change how many troops are in Iraq from Great Britain.
She is sort of like, it seems to me that she is sort of like the Pope, in that the Pope, again, as you said, there's a lot of symbolic authority, but the Pope can't, like, tell anybody what to do. I mean, he could, but they can just disregard him. I mean, politically speaking, that's kind of what the Queen is, right?
That may be a good comparison.
Yeah, and so she's just sort of here just because, I guess. To the best of your knowledge, do the British ever get tired of having to, like, pay to take care of the royals who, from all appearances, do a whole lot of nothing?
There are many British, and there may be some listening to this program, who it drives them crazy, who are furious over it. And there we have some good British friends here in Washington who we love to bring this up because it actually makes us giggle how it's funny at first to us, and then they just are so serious it really drives them crazy. And but not everyone. There's, of course, many people in Great Britain who love the monarchy, think it's a great tradition. But the Queen didn't start paying taxes, I think, until the 90s. And she's got billions of dollars, so she's just started paying taxes really relatively recently.
I think it was, here's a dumb question. Where do the royals get their money from? Or is it just that they always had it and it just is right. just still there?
Well, if you want to go all the way back, it starts with the land that they took in the big power fights way back in the day. But land, castles, all of that, it's accumulated. She doesn't have a side oil business or anything like that. But she does have many things that are profitable. She does. She is a woman of the horses. She does win many horse races. She makes money off of that. You know, when you've got a lot of money, it is easier to make money.
A woman of the horse. It seems there's a Catherine the Great joke there that I will not. I will not deign.
Catch that.
Yeah. I'm above that, though. I'm not going to make that joke. I think it was Helen Fielding, who was the author of Bridget Jones' Diary. I think it was her who made the observation. She said, I don't understand why we pay a whole lot of money to someone for the sole purpose, just so they can be better than us, which is sort of the British and the royals.
Have you guys talked about the whole Bush and the Queen moment today?
No. Tell me he tried to give her a back rub.
No, but they're standing there, and of course the Queen, as you said, she's got the one expression that some would say is dour, others would say maybe dignified, but whatever it is, it's stone face. And there's the President, who likes to be kind of a yuckster, coming up there, and practically pulling out his little fake cowboy guns from his pockets, and he says the Queen has sat down or dined with 10 U.S. presidents, and then he made a slip up and said, going back to 17, he's going to say a different date, but then he looks at her, realizing he's just saying that she's about 300 years old, and he winks at the Queen, who just gives him that icy look you may get away with that stuff with the Japanese prime minister.
You can't wink at the Queen, even I know that.
You know, and so then he tries to recover. He says, she just looked at me as a mother would look at a son.
He's not helping.
You know, as a child. And then, waiting for her to laugh at this awkward moment, and she never does.
Well, she doesn't laugh. I don't think she has those muscles.
Look. You know, but, well, she does smile on occasion, but yeah, she does not laugh at such, and Bush, and you know how sometimes it's awkward, and we've talked about this before, when Bush is walking in or out with the head of state from another nation, sometimes it seems he gets maybe a little touchy. Like, sometimes he'll hug him, or he'll touch their arm.
Oh, yeah.
You know, it's just a little awkward.
Yeah.
And in this particular case, he was a good distance away from the Queen when they walked out. It was almost as if his mother had, in fact, told him to stop fidgeting, and he was really being extremely careful.
Yeah, and I suspect she's got quills, too. I mean, that's just a guess.
No.
I think you touch her, you're going to... I think if you try to touch her, you're going to pull back a stump. That's just my guess.
Well, you know, back in the day, I don't know if she still does this, but she has often had, in the linings of her skirts, in the bottom, in the hem, they put little small lead weights so that should a wind come, it will not raise her skirt.
See, and stuff, I don't know why. Stuff like that just makes me despise her. I don't know why. There's no reason... I have no reason to dislike the Queen. I just do. I think it's maybe just, I think I've just got, like, just my not-so-subtle classism is just showing through here, so.
Right. But she is definitely one of the last vestiges of a very old class system, an old way of doing things.
Yeah, I suppose.
Was it, you know.
I guess I'm just.
She's not changing. She's not, old Bushy's not gonna be the one.
And I think we'll go out on that quote. All right. We're glad you enjoyed the video. We're glad you enjoyed Alison Arngrim. I'm sure we will be having speaks with you later on in the week. So enjoy
Excellent.
The rest of your afternoon. Lisa Goddard, ladies and gentlemen, thank you. All right. There you go. Lisa Goddard on the Hill. Fantastic. Old Bushy. That's what I'm going to call him from now on.
She's funny.
I think I'm sweating. I think my right armpit is sweating a lot more than my left one.
Dude, are you wearing deodorant?
Well, here's the thing about
that. Maybe Scotty has his.
No, don't ever say that again. I'm not wearing my deodorant. I'm wearing my wife's. It is strong enough for a man, even though it is made for a woman.
Why are you wearing Lara's deodorant?
Because I ran out of mine last night, and I didn't want to go to the store at like 2 in the morning. And so I'm just wearing whatever my wife, that's secret or whatever. So I smell like a baby. I smell like
and
a small
you're
child.
Sweating profusely.
I smell
pretty gross.
I smell like a sweaty child. All right, we should take a break here. It's 503-733-2970. Come right down. Blah, 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 blah. Come up around the corner. Tim Riley at the Ministry of Truth. Later on, CNN radio correspondent James Roop. You stay there. It's the Rick Emerson Show on AM 970. Solid State Radio. Don't go anywhere. Live from Portland, it's 503-733-2970. 503-733-2970. Ladies and gentlemen, please pay heed. He is your president, prophet, seer, and revelator.
Time for the Rick Emerson Noon News Hour from AM 970 Solid State Radio. And now, from the Ministry of Truth, this is Tim Riley.
Teenage rashers are safe after night on the river. They launched their Catcher on Noontime Mystery at Dodge Park on the Sandy River. But they didn't come home last night. Their parents called search and rescue. They were found this morning at Camp Collins. They were having trouble with river currents, and they weren't going to make it back by nightfall. So they camped out and burned some of their clothing to stay warm. So if you're a kid, you should also be prepared with extra food, clothing, and other gear in case you're forced to camp overnight. Four people have been accused of trying to smuggle chewing tobacco into the Amhill County Jail by hiding it into a prosthetic leg. Sheriff Crabtree, the deputies learned this
really?
Leak of the plot. Yes.
Fantastic.
An inmate faked a fall and damage to the leg, and a former inmate picked it up for repair.
Let's just be honest, though. I when you started to say the accused of smuggling chewing tobacco in by smuggling it inside a the number of things that could have ended in, I'll take prosthetic leg. That's fine. I'm okay with that.
Well, deputies said when the leg came back, they found about 2 cans worth of chewing tobacco, sealed in foil and hidden in a hollow section. By the way, tobacco was banished from the jail back in 1991. So contraband supplies are valuable. A pack of cigarettes goes for $100 in jail, and a can of chewing tobacco, only $50. Meanwhile,
here's a story that you probably aren't going to believe, but it's true.
All right, now, is this the story I think you're talking about?
Yes, it is.
Okay, this story is horrifying. Mm-hmm. This story is disgusting.
Yes.
This story is disturbing.
Very.
You may never be the same after hearing this story. This story may completely and finally warp you for all time. I forbid Sarah from taking off her headphones right now, by the way. Right now in advance, you have to suffer through this story with the rest of us.
Seriously?
I'm not going to be the only one with this in my head, so to speak. All right, ladies and gentlemen, Tim Riley presents a story that you will never be able to unhear.
Well, a nine-year-old Albany, Oregon boy knew something was wrong when one of his ears started making a popping sound, kind of like Rice Krispies. So Jesse Courtney complained to his mother, who promptly took him to a doctor. Dr. David Irwine says a routine examination showed Jesse had something in his ear, all right, but no one was ready for what came next. Not one, but two giant spiders were inside the boy's ear.
It was not a spider, but it was a spider. And it was still moving. It was cool to have two spiders in my ear.
Oh, that's the cutest thing ever.
That's right. See, the bugs were as big as pencil erasers.
Yeah, two of them, spiders living inside his ear. The worst line, let's see, and I've got a copy of the story over here, too. We're going to read this again later as our part of our hunt for the second worst story ever. Here's two of the worst lines from this. As again, this is from Albany. A nine-year-old boy complained of an earache, was surprised when a doctor told him a pair of spiders had made a home out of him.
Made a home out of him.
There's two horrible lines here. One is when Jesse Courtney, who's a nine-year-old, said, "They were walking on my eardrums." And by the way, the idea that he thinks it's cool, that's a function of being not a boy, but being a nine-year-old boy. Once you're like 14, that's no longer cool. That is horrifying. Right here, this is the worst part here, is his mother, Diane, said her son insisted he kept hearing a faint popping in his ear like Rice Krispies, which is just, I mean, I can't even tell you how disgusting that is. All right.
He says the bugs are as big as pencil erasers. Not only is Jesse feeling good after his ordeal, but he's very excited about the new two dead spiders. He's keeping them in the jar, so he'll end up on a Letterman probably, at least.
It's just horrifying. Let's hope they didn't lay eggs inside.
Mm-hmm. Meanwhile, Spider-Man is keeping audiences coming back for more. The movie, that is, not spiders in the ear. Spider-Man 3 is the third installment of the blockbuster superhero adventure, easily topping the box office, shattering records in the process. According to the new estimate, Spider-Man 3 netted an unprecedented $148 million in ticket sales in its opening weekend.
It netted $148 million?
Yes, it did.
Okay.
Now, it's like that, I have Sony studio execs toying with the idea of a possible fourth film in the franchise. Tobey Maguire says he's open to the idea with certain conditions.
Great script with a story that was, you know, fresh and unique and worth telling. Part of that is that there'd have to be something new for Peter Parker, some new territory to cover, something that was, I don't know, something great for Peter, and then Sam would have to be involved, the right cast would have to be there, and at that point I'd be willing to consider it.
All of this just means that he's going to demand more money, which is the same thing he did before the second one. Remember for Spider-Man 2, he's like, "I've got a backache," and they were going to hire him, and they were going to get, what's his guts, Jake Gyllenhaal, to do which
he's got a double chin ache now. He's going to need some surgery pretty soon.
Does he have a waddle? Mm-hmm. Really?
Yes. They hit it when he was in the Spider-Man costume, but not when he was Peter Parker.
Yeah, a lot of him, like, jutting his chin forward. Stretching his neck out. I thought that they could get rid of all that stuff with movie magic now.
They could, but they didn't bother.
They chose not to. Because I know that there's been movies where they've... what was that movie that came out a couple years ago where they de-nippled some woman? There was a woman walking around, and you could see her womanly bumps through her clothing. And they said they realized it in, like, a test screening. There was a lot of, like, those 3x5 cards got filled with, like, found nipples distracting, you know, or nipples were great, need to see more of them. And then they went back and they de-nippled the girl. Speaking of which, let me say this. I'm simply making this observation journalistically now. This is simply a journalistic observation. I am making this here in the news hour. I don't wish for this to sound lecherous. I'm just going to say this, because I think she's not 18 yet, so I'm simply making this observation.
Oh.
Emma Watson, who plays Hermione Granger in the Harry Potter films, if you poke around online, you can sort of find this probably. It's safe for work. It's kind of creepy. I'm pretty sure that it is the the poster for Harry Potter and the Order of the Phoenix, the 3D version,
mm-hmm.
They've done this side-by-side comparison. There's this poster out for Harry Potter and the Order of the Phoenix. Simultaneously, they are releasing the film in 3D. And so there are two separate posters, one for the regular version of Harry Potter and the Order of the Phoenix, one for the 3D version of Harry Potter and the Order of the Phoenix. Same exact art, same, you know, it's like a photograph that's sort of been drawn on or whatever, you know, sort of an augmented photograph. Exactly the same art, but in the one for the 3D movie, whoever it is that put together the poster made what's-her-name Emma Watson's chest like three sizes larger. It's like the creepiest thing. Because she's only like 16, I think.
Yeah.
Some guy's like, well, we need more boob. And so they just totally like drew out the boob. It's really unnerving to look at.
The trailer for the new movie I saw for the first time yesterday.
For Order of the Phoenix?
Yeah, the newest movie coming up in July, I believe.
Fantastic. I'm all over that. Blah, 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 Tobey Maguire. Oh, but I thought he wasn't going to return for the fourth one, and I heard the third one was crap. You saw it, right?
Yeah.
Is it terrible?
It was a little less than crap.
All right, but it was...
Almost.
But, I mean, on the classic 1 to 10 scale.
Ugh.
I mean, not as good as the second one, obviously.
5.
Yeah, really?
Yeah.
All right, because
people are getting hit with terrific pieces of CGI.
Is the CGI convincing? Because that's the problem with the first one, to me.
The problem is... It actually gets boring after a while.
Yeah.
Because you've seen it all before, and nothing excites you about it.
Well, and I don't... That's why I'm not in any way excited about the Transformers film, because it's... I will say this. Grindhouse had many, many flaws. Grindhouse is far from a perfect movie. It's too long. Tarantino's dialogue is real stale. You know, it's like you've seen one zombie decapitate somebody, you've seen the whole thing. I will say this about Grindhouse. Mm-hmm. Grindhouse, the Tarantino section of Grindhouse, has the best car chase I've seen in like 20 years. And the reason why it's so great is because you can tell there's no CGI. It's a stunt person on the front of a car that's going around 85 miles an hour down a backcountry road, being filmed, obviously, by a helicopter. It is absolutely the real deal. There's no computer generated imagery. There's no Hollywood trickery except for a stunt person. That's what makes it so great. CGI is like, if they can show you everything now via computers, then nothing is exciting. There's nothing interesting.
But I will say one good thing about it was there was so much CGI and so many sound effects, you couldn't hear babies cry or cell phones go off during this movie. And people actually brought babies to this thing. No, not in front of me. And of course, it's right in front of me.
It's always right in front of you.
And the people with the cell phones and the rattling cups, but you couldn't hear anything because it was constant action.
There was sufficient loudness.
Yeah.
That's again how Grindhouse was. Lauren would see Grindhouse, and you can gauge how bad the audience is going to be as you get further in, because with each layer, with each step in the film going, in the film viewing process that night, people become, the level of silence advances. In other words, people will chatter like idiots all the way through the 20.
Mm-hmm.
And then when you get to the, please turn off your cell phones, people quiet down a little bit. And then when you get to the previews, most people have quit talking. And by the time the actual movie starts, everybody's kind of shut up. And so you can always gauge who's going to be a problem because they're the ones still talking during the trailers. And so the trailer's going and there's just some woman and you can hear the gum snapping in her mouth as she's yammering away to some equally fat friend who probably lives in Gresham. And it's a whole lot of, I told him if he didn't have his child support within 2 weeks, I was going to call the county on him. And Lauren and I were doing this thing.
He took off in the Hyundai and I haven't seen him since.
I just know he's seeing that slut from the plant pantry. And Lauren and I are taking bets on what she looks like without turning around to check, and sure enough, fat, big, curly hair, lots of makeup, thinks she's hot. You just know it. You just know she thinks she's all that. And she just kept running her goddamn mouth all the way up until the movie started, and then she kept talking during the movie. But as you said, as soon as the first action sequence started, they turned the volume up so loud that I couldn't hear her. It was like a sweet relief.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Do we have more Spider-Man sound?
Yes, we do. We have Kirsten the Dunst, and she was asked if she and the others were considering whether or not they'd come back for a fourth motion picture.
Oh yeah. We've thought about it because everyone asks us about it, and we've thought about it, and I think the only way we'd come back together is if it was, you know, me, Toby, and Sam, our team, you know?
Yeah, I just don't care. I mean, I'll see it, I suppose, but...
It's better than nothing.
I want to support Sam Raimi, but I just don't care that much about it. Let me just say this, though, and this is going to be my one sacred mission this week. You must, you have to I implore you to go see a movie that's playing at the Regal 10 downtown, which I think is the one on Broadway. It's the one right by the Flying Elephant Delicatessen. There's a new movie out called The TV Set, starring Sigourney Weaver, David Duchovny, and some sort of some hot teen actors that you probably know from, you know, that's like the actors that like Sarah would probably know. I'm looking right now, IMDb, to see who's in it. Also, it's got that hot girl who played Kitty on Arrested Development, and it took me forever to place exactly where I knew her from. But that's where she was. She was Kitty in Arrested Development, and I didn't recognize her for the longest time. David Duchovny, who, by the way, I thought for the longest time couldn't act. I just sort of assumed that he was
he's a great actor.
See, I didn't know. I just thought he was Fox Mulder. I just thought he was like, hi, I'm the stiff guy, you know? Let's see. It's got David Duchovny, Sigourney Weaver, Judy Greer, Lindsay Sloan. Justine Bateman's in it, too. That's the other thing. Justine Bateman is in it and is just it's fantastic. It's so great to see her again. It's so good. If you are a fan of Freaks and Geeks, if you were a fan of Wonderfalls, any of those shows that have been prematurely canceled, you really, really have to see it, and I won't give any spoilers. But what it does is it tracks the life of one television show from the first pilot script until the pilot is finished. And if you've ever wondered why television shows are so bad, if you've ever wondered why everything on TV is crap, if you've ever wondered why the things that make it onto the air are just relentlessly mediocre, this movie lays it all out for you. It was written and directed by a guy who was one of the writers and directors on Freaks and Geeks, and he clearly drew from that experience. And what it basically does is it starts off with David Duchovny as a writer who has created this brilliant, quirky, sort of funny, dramatic television program, and it follows the script's development all the way through the focus grouping process, the revision process, where the corporate hands start to meddle with it, where the executives step in and start to screw around with the script and demand that he make changes to make it more broad-based and more appealing to the wider idiot demographic. I mean, it is a very dark, very bleak, very biting, satirical it's a very satirical look at how television series are made in this country. It is fantastic. I can't speak highly enough of it. So go check it out. It's called The TV Set. It's playing on the Regal 10 downtown in Portland. You will not regret it. It's a fantastic film. You got to see that. And, that may be Spider-Man 3, I suppose.
Then we have Sacha Baron Cohen set to play Freddie Mercury in the big budget movie about his life. The Barat star, who's 35, elbowed Johnny Depp from the role after winning over producers and band members. An insider says filmmakers are working flat out to get the best possible script. Sacha loves the idea, and he can get away with playing Freddie after modeling Barat's look on him. Meanwhile, Los Angeles County Superior Court judges have suspended David Hasselhoff's right to visit his children.
Good for them.
Right after that video. He was allowed to call them on the phone, though.
Yeah, I'm just kidding.
He might turn over that duty to Alex Baldwin.
Seriously, that guy's a douche. F him. They ought to take him and just lock him inside a small metal box and then toss it into the ocean. That guy just irritates me beyond. I don't know what it is about Hollywood parents. I don't know if they've always just been completely crazy and we're only just now, this is new technology that's allowing us to find out about it. I mean, because it took us. Was Joan Crawford dead when Christina Crawford published Mommy Dearest?
Yep, right after that.
Really?
It's like a week after that.
Like, you know, you're like, you know, she had a written just sitting in a steamer trunk somewhere, just waiting for Joan to kick it, and then immediately that book came out. So.
Yeah, because, you know, the last sentence in the movie is, some would say, she always gets the last word, and then they have her grinning.
I guess that's it. I guess you used to have to wait until your parents were dead, and then you'd just publish some scabrous tell-all. But now, man, you don't need that. You need the internet. And just suddenly, Alec Baldwin calling his daughter a little pig is suddenly out there, just like it is with this David Hasselhoff thing. So, F him. Yeah, that guy's an a-hole. Hi, Rick Emerson Show. Hello.
Hello?
Hi.
Hi, Rick. It's Judy.
Hey, Judy.
I just thought I'd let you and Sarah and everyone know I was surfing last week. Daniel Radcliffe, who plays Potter,
yes,
is in a Broadway musical called Aquinas.
Oh, this is where he shows his weenus.
Oh, man. It ruins Potter for the rest of it. It's really hard to look at Harry Potter as Harry Potter after seeing that.
Well, I suppose. That was a little breathy sigh.
It was very breathy. It's like you feel about Emma Watson. Yes. I'm like, oh, man. Potter's a guy.
Okay, now let's be clear about something. I don't feel any way about Emma Watson except that she's a fine actress who I believe is not yet 18. So
I'll second that emotion.
I have no untoward emotions about Emma Watson. I appreciate her aesthetically speaking. And as a fan of her many films. Daniel Radcliffe, is he 18 yet? Do we ever figure this out? I don't think he's 18. I believe he is actually still a minor, Judy.
I don't know. I kind of, it's surprising that they let a minor do a naked scene on Broadway.
Well, it's art, though. If naked is dirty. Nude is art.
Oh,
so
I'm
he's
sorry.
Not naked, he's nude.
I'll educate myself next time.
Yes, please. I'm unclear. See, I think if somebody had asked us that, because here's why. Here's why this is of interest to me. Because I'm a big nerd, and so a bunch of people, men and women, had sent me this, like, hey, did you see that Harry Potter guy's nude? Check out this photograph of him with his tackle hanging out. And then that brought up this whole question of, like, well, is he 18? And if not, am I now in possession of child pornography on my computer? And I'm really unclear. I don't think I ever did get a firm answer as to whether or not he was 18 years of age when that photo was taken.
Oh, I would have to believe he is. I'd say maybe just 18. But
let's all agree to tell the police that.
That's a good one, guys.
Oh, wait. Sarah has just confirmed that he's 17.
He's 17. His birthday is on July 23rd.
Judy's a felon. Judy's a felon.
I work for the government.
Well, not anymore. All right. Thank you, Judy.
I take care of God's special children.
Okay.
Bye, guys.
Bye. All right. Fantastic. Here's Tim Riley.
Extreme Makeover Home Edition star Ty Pennington was arrested over the weekend in L.A. on suspicion of being under the influence of drugs and alcohol while driving. He was arrested at 12:35 in the morning, released 2 hours later after posting $5,000 bail, which he probably had in his wallet. Meanwhile, in her first public comment since her prison sentence, celebrity heiress and reality TV star Paris Hilton describes her 45-day jail term as cruel and unwarranted, visibly shocked and tearful. She was sentenced Friday to 45 days in jail after a judge ruled she knowingly violated her probation. Judge Michael Sauer rejected the 26-year-old socialite's defense that she didn't realize her license was suspended and ordered her to report to a county detention facility June 5th. I told the truth, said Paris. I felt I was treated unfairly, and the sentence was both cruel and unwanted. I don't deserve this. Her lawyer, Howard Weitzman, said he will appeal to modify the sentence. Hilton's mother, Kathy, voiced her anger at the ruling over the weekend. This is pathetic and disgusting. A waste of taxpayers' money with this nonsense. It's a joke. Well, the fans began sending messages of support. One fan wrote to Governor Schwarzenegger asking him to intervene and keep Hilton out of jail.
Yeah, I'm sure he'll get right on
she
that.
She provides hope for young people all over the U.S. and the world. She provides beauty and excitement to our otherwise mundane lives.
Yes. Yes, I know that my existence is... really, the only thing Paris Hilton has ever done to cheer my existence is this right here. Is to be sent. And I know that she hired some other lawyer who's trying to appeal the sentence, and I swear to God, there's going to be a revolution if she doesn't end up going to jail.
How could she appeal it? I mean, is there any way...
No, she's got like $1 billion. That's pretty much the loophole. I mean, I think everybody is sort of surprised that she actually got hit with this. I read somewhere, I don't know if this is true, I read that judge got a standing ovation somewhere he went to after he sentenced her, which I think happened Friday. Did that happen? Yeah, Friday.
Yeah.
Then on Saturday, he went to some event somewhere, some civic event, and, like, he walked into the room, and everybody stood up and gave him a standing ovation, which just demonstrates, by the way, how sick of her we are as a society. This really is just the most gratifying thing ever. And she's just such a whiny bitch. I mean, she's just, I hate to sound... I don't hate it. I'm fine saying this. I'm fine being caustic. She is just such a whiny sea. You know what I mean? Just such a... She's obviously a terrible person, like, all the way to her core. And you always hear about the people, well, she's got a gruff exterior, but a heart of gold. She does not have a heart of gold. She's just got a heart of just vile, putrid blackness. That's what Paris Hilton has. I, for one, am just ecstatic about this. I mean, inside my heart, I'm doing cartwheels. The best part about it is, I guess I am disproportionately happy about this, but it's so satisfying to me. It's just gratifying beyond words. And especially that the judge specifically said that she's not to go to one of those glamour slammers, as they call it, one of those the Hollywood places where they send, like, celebrities. She's supposed to go to just like the... Is this like the L.A. County Jail? Is that where she does time, do you
think?
Yeah. Well, the L.A. County Jail is like the worst thing on earth. I mean, I've never been there, obviously, but from all stories, from everything I have ever heard, the L.A. County Jail is like the worst place outside of Guatemala to be imprisoned. I've got this. This is from the New York Daily News, Linwood, California. Hotel heiress Paris Hilton better watch her back in the Century Regional Detention Facility. Remember to ask Rupert about this. Visitors who were at the jail yesterday warned, if you act like you're all high class and uppity, said Denise Chavez, you're done. About 150 men and women were waiting outside the jail yesterday to see family and friends. Many said they believed the 26-year-old Hilton was in for a strong dose of reality. One man who declined to give his wife's name said, my ex-wife got beaten up and got a black eye in this place. How good would that make you feel if you saw Paris Hilton just with... I'm not saying that I wish it happens. I'm not saying that I hope it happens. But I'm saying, God forbid, heaven forfend, that something happened to her on the inside that was beyond our control. It would warm the insides of my heart. Hilton better hope that inmates don't remember the videotape broadcast on YouTube that showed her mocking Jewish and black people. She better learn to bite her tongue. I think somebody else will be doing that for her, by the way. If she does report to the jail, Hilton will be likely to be living in a one- or two-person cell. A woman who gave her name as Melanie said her mother is in jail on a narcotics charge, and Hilton better thank her lucky stars for extra security. This woman said the general population showers together, and that a large group of, quote, very masculine lesbians, end quote, will be looking to prey on Paris.
This will never go. This is too good. It's too good. It'll never happen.
This is bad, the woman said. Paris ain't gonna make it. Hilton will have to say goodbye to dye jobs and cosmetics and hello to 5-minute showers once a day. Her friends and family will only be able to talk to her through glass. Her phone calls will be made on the jail's closely monitored payphones. In the big house, Paris will have to make do with 2 pairs of socks, 1 bra, 2 pairs of panties, and 2 blue jumpsuits per week. 2 pairs of underwear a week. In your face. You have to take your underwear and wash them out in the shower. The only thing you're allowed for makeup is a lip liner. She'll get a stainless steel cot topped by a thin mattress, 1 thin sheet, and a scratchy wool blanket. The bedding is minimal, says Debbie Day. Debbie, whose 25-year-old daughter is locked up. And my daughter says, the food is disgusting. Paris, you know, and the more I read, the happier the audience is. You know that it's true. Paris will start her days in jail with a hard-boiled egg, a bowl of cold cereal, and a small carton of milk. For lunch, what do you think she gets for lunch? She gets bologna and bread with mustard and mayonnaise, sometimes an apple and some watered-down juice.
Yeah, I don't like you reading that because it's just torture.
Because it gets your hopes up.
Yeah, when is she supposed to go?
June, when is it, Tim? June 5th? Yes, makes me happy. Ryan, you're on the Rick Emerson Show. Hello.
Hey, Rick. When I heard that she was getting sentenced to 45 days, yeah. I literally told everybody I know, because I don't know anybody who actually likes her, and I was just giddy with glee, you know. It's just, it really warms my heart.
It does. Sometimes the system works, sir.
Well, hopefully they will go through with it, you know, and actually put her in there, because one of my friends said that he's pretty sure that even if she's only there for like a week, you know, even if they reduce the sentence and she's only there for like 6 days, she'll probably come out bald.
Oh, I hope so. I you couldn't make me happier. I mean, it's just, and you know, this judge, whoever he is, because I guess judges, I don't know if judges are, if they have to be reelected or do they have to stand for reelection. I don't know how that works, but this judge's popularity has just shot up like 500%.
Do you think it's illegal if we send unwarranted gifts to this judge?
No, I think you're absolutely... We should totally do that. We should totally...
Send him a thank you basket?
We should totally send some sort of a thank you basket to the judge. I like the way you think, Ryan.
We could send it to him saying, thank you for doing your
for
job.
Upholding the law.
Yeah, thanks from AM 970 and all the citizens of the city of Portland.
God bless you. That's a great idea. Thank you, sir.
All right, yeah, no
that's Ryan. Now, we'll get Ryan. I'll talk to Rube about that. Here's Tim Riley, the Ministry of Truth.
Well, let's talk about that that tornado that wiped out that Kansas town like they didn't know that could happen. Greenburg, Kansas is gone. Not that you knew it was there in the first place. Most of it got wiped out. Their governor, whose name is Kathleen, wishes the National Guard could help out, but they're all away in Iraq.
We're missing about half of our trucks from the National Guard units. Clearly, trucks to haul this debris away would be enormously helpful. We're missing flatbeds. We're missing Humvees, which are used to get people to safety and security and haul equipment around. And we're missing a number of our well-trained National Guard personnel.
Yes. Yes. All right.
Jesus.
I never even thought about that.
Yeah.
That's the National Guard is the guys that they would be calling in to fix all that crap. And there's just nobody there. It's all in Afghanistan.
Meanwhile, school superintendent Darren Hedrick at least has a sense of humor about this.
We need a little bit of relief from Mother Nature right now. We had the tornadoes, obviously, a lot of rain. We had a lot of hail yesterday, came down pretty hard. We just hope the locusts don't come.
It is funny. You know, you look at that whole city and it's just gone. What is it, Greenburg?
Yeah, Greenburg.
It's just gone. That's the weird thing when you look at the map, Greenburg, Kansas. There's that grain silo in the middle of town. You see those photographs. There's a grain silo, but that's it. I mean,
everything's right.
Everything dead. Yeah. The rest of the town is flattened. And I will say this. They noted that all, like, five churches or whatever in the town were destroyed. Mm-hmm. And I'm not glad that, of course, that any building got destroyed, and I'm of course not glad that a church was destroyed. I will simply say this, that every cloud does have a silver lining, and the silver lining from all the churches being destroyed is we are going to be spared the obligatory story by some mouth-breathing nitwit going, well, if you look, though, you will see that the churches were spared, and I think that we can all, you know, because you know that every time one of these tornadoes goes through some hick town, and there's like, I don't know, and they'll find like two pieces of wood that happened to land like one on top of the other forming a cross, and then some mouth breather gets on television and just ejaculates a bunch of crap about God smiling on the town as 98% of it is destroyed. So at least we'll be spared that since all of the churches have been decimated. So, all right, here's Tim Riley.
Trooper Ron Nosel says the famous tourist attraction has been located.
They have found the meteorite, and it has been recovered.
They had a famous meteorite there.
Thank God.
So, everything else is gone, but they still have a meteorite, so maybe that is the new guy.
All right. Should all start praying to the meteorite now, since it survived. I think you can say God is sending a message by sparing the meteorite. You are to be gathering around it and bowing down in the nude. Rachel, Rochelle, how do you pronounce this?
Rochelle.
Rochelle, hi there, how are you?
I'm pretty good.
What's up?
I am in Minnesota driving through a hell of a rainstorm. And I just wanted to thank you for having such a great show. I turned on a podcast from April 23rd, and here's what I heard. Well, bees seem pretty smart.
Well, they do. Why are you in Minnesota?
My husband and I accidentally moved here.
Oh, okay. So you're not driving through on your way to somewhere better.
What?
You're not driving through on your way to somewhere better.
No.
Well, that's unfortunate.
It would take days of driving to find someplace better in that side of the country.
Let me ask you this. I don't mean to bash on the town or anybody. Every town has something good about it. What is, and I mean this sincerely, what's the best thing about Minnesota?
Garrison Keillor.
Prince. Yeah, we're still trying to figure that out.
Isn't Minnesota where Paisley Park is? Isn't that where Prince lives?
Yeah, I would say Minneapolis has to probably be the best thing about Minnesota.
All right. Okay.
Minneapolis.
Okay. All right. And so
unfortunately, we don't live there.
Did you, okay, so really there's nothing. So you're just living in the middle of a big empty, just a big donut is where you are there.
Yeah, in fact, right now I'm on the highway, and there's a tractor on the left-hand lane going about 30. There's about 20 cars behind him, and that's pretty much my life.
Now, did you live in Portland at one time?
We lived in Salem.
Okay, so is that how you are familiar with the show?
Correct.
Okay, excellent.
And now I can only listen to it through podcasts now.
Well, the podcasts are up every day at 970.am, and they're also at rickemerson.com. There's some listeners who do kind of some bootleg versions themselves. The ones at 970.am are higher quality audio-wise, but the ones at rickemerson.com go up faster. So there's sort of a yin-yang kind of a thing. So,
well, I appreciate you making my commute a little bit better.
It's what we do. Well, we hope you get to move back to Oregon at some point. In the meantime, enjoy the show via podcast. And spread the word to your fellow Minnesotans, my friend.
Will do. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Rochelle.
Bye-bye.
There you go. There's Rochelle in Minnesota. God, what a hellish existence that sounds like. Just sounds like you wake up every day and just look out at a steel gray rain and have to decide whether you're going to like reach for a bottle of whiskey or a handgun. Here's Tim Riley.
Now, meanwhile, Colorado Springs police were called to a local church yesterday after a man came in and threw a pie at the preacher. Police say Marcus Hyde allegedly hit the reverend in the face with pie. But Armstrong was delivering a sermon at Grace Church. A church member said held Hyde at the church until authorities arrived. Armstrong has been accused of misappropriating church funds, and he currently leads a separatist group that left the diocese.
There's been
verbal abuse hurled against Father Armstrong, but I've never seen anything physical against him. I think it was a personal attack against him, you know, based on the accusations that have been made against him.
Somebody threw a pie at him?
Yeah.
Where does it... Let me ask you this.
Where do you find the pie in Colorado?
That was going to be my second question.
I would imagine they have Marie Callender's.
My first question is, at what point in human evolution did the pie become the go-to device that you used? You know, like, that was the go-to object at some point that you throw at somebody.
Oh. That's a lot of hard work put into that.
You just
throw it?
You're not throwing a cake. People don't throw bags of cookies. No one's, you know, you're not throwing a daiquiri at somebody. Mm-hmm. You're not throwing a pan full of brownies. It's a pie. I don't know when it is that we decided on the pie as the dessert of choice.
It might go back to the days of vaudeville, I would imagine.
Entirely possible, I suppose. All right, we'll take a break. We'll come back. More of Tim Riley around the corner. It's 503-733-2970. 503-733-2970. Later on, Peter Carlin, Top 5. All that's the Rick Emerson Show on AM 970. Solid State Radio. Don't go anywhere. Come on in my jacuzzi. 503-733-2970. Coming up later on, CNN Radio correspondent James Roop. Also the news pile, also a hunt for the second worst story ever, and so forth. Oh, by the way, I got about Gmail people, the audience sort of into two chunks on Friday. A bunch of the audience went to see Alison Arngrim at CC Slaughter's, and a bunch of the audience went to see George Carlin. So it looks like everybody was amused on all fronts. So, all right, here's Tim Riley at the Ministry of Truth.
Hawaii says goodbye to its biggest hoe. Singer Don Ho got a moving send-off over the weekend, an event filled with the island flair he was known for. Thousands turned out to honor Ho in a ceremony along Queen's Beach in Waikiki. Friends, family, fellow entertainers, beach boys and gals, fans all joined in the remembrance of the iconic singer who shared a piece of aloha with the entire world. Dozens of canoes, boats and paddlers gathered offshore as Ho's ashes were scattered. Flowers were dropped from a plane overhead and leis were sent adrift. Ho also got a military gun salute and a jet flyover by the Hawaii National Guard. Several noted performers paid tribute to the Ho, including his youngest daughter, Huku, who sang, "I Remember You." Ho died of heart failure on April 14th. He was 76 years of age.
All right. And the only song I know by him is Tiny Bubbles. But
that's the only song he ever did.
But see, the thing is, though, I don't even know how that song goes.
Well, it's a constant loop when you go to Hawaii. It's everywhere.
You get off the plane and they just sort of, they give you a stupid lay and then a guy, this is a Tiny Bubbles thing going. I don't even really know how this, it's not like it's really going to nag at me, so don't feel like you have to call up and like clarify exactly how it goes. I know that he did that song. That's a little piece of pop culture in my head, but I couldn't
sing. 41 years ago.
I couldn't sing the song for you. My life depended on it. And also,
there's a little speck on the counter that's bothering me. All right, there's a little white speck on the counter I had to get rid of.
You are such a nut.
Stop it. Blah, 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 Don Ho, blah, 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 Tiny Bubbles, I something else. Oh, and also, I guess, here's the thing. It's because I've never been there, so I will say this in advance. I've never been to Hawaii, but there's something, I have no desire to go there. And I don't know why it is. I think it's because I equate Hawaii with being trashy. I don't know why that is. Has anybody here been there?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, I'm sorry. Oh, okay,
oh, I didn't mean it like that.
Have you been there, Tim?
No, I've never wanted to go to Hawaii.
See, that's what I'm saying. I have no desire to go there.
Hanama Bay is really cool.
I don't even know what that is.
You get to go and swim with fish.
Really?
Like it's this bay, and it's really cool, and you can get peas. Well, you used to be able to. I don't know if you can anymore, but it's this huge bay, and you can snorkel through there, and it's completely crystal clear water, and there are all kinds of fish and stuff.
I mean, maybe it just makes me sound like a retard that I don't want to go. I think it's because I grew up next door to some neighbors who were always going to Hawaii, and they had the whole stupid Hawaii theme in their house. Like, they had a big rack of Don Ho records. You'd walk in, and they had a whole bunch of, and then they had a bunch of plastic leis hanging everywhere from, like, their various trips to Hawaii. And I think from that day forward, I have always equated going to Hawaii. I think I have always viewed Hawaii as, I don't know, it's just like a slightly more upscale Disneyland for some reason. I've always just viewed it as just like a vacation for white trash.
In Hawaii, every person I know, every couple that goes there, unless they're married, goes to Hawaii and breaks up. Hawaii is the breakup place. Like, don't go to with somebody that you care about.
That should be on their T-shirt. Come here and split up.
Yeah, every relationship I've seen people go that when they come back from Hawaii, they're broken up.
Well done. Here's Tim Riley.
Meanwhile, the president has welcomed Britain's queen to the White House. He met her on the South Lawn, and it featured a 21-gun salute more than Don Ho, and the original anthems of the U.S. and Great Britain. The president said Britain has helped write many of the great chapters in the history of mankind.
As liberty expanded in the British Isles, British explorers helped spread liberty to many lands, including our own. The settlers at Jamestown planted the seeds of freedom and democracy on American soil. From those seeds sprung a nation that will always be proud to trace its roots back to our friends across the Atlantic.
I was just going to say, is this a new trend that they're editing Bush's speeches down like this? Because it seems like every soundbite we get from the Metro News Service, like you can tell that it's a, like about a 45-second speech or a 2-minute speech that they've edited down to about 12 seconds. I wonder if that's a thing his handlers are now asking the news organizations to do, or if the news organizations have got some sort of tacit agreement that they won't make him look like a retard, or won't allow him to make himself look like a retard in exchange for special favors.
Yeah, that's that lady in Washington tomorrow when you talk to her.
Seriously, I do wonder about that. All right.
Meanwhile, the Queen says now is the time to look at the past and the future between the U.S. and Britain.
It is the moment to take stock of our present friendship, rightly taking pleasure from its strengths, while never taking these for granted. And it is the time to look forward, jointly renewing our commitment to a more prosperous, safer, and freer world.
Oh, God, don't you just want to see her savaged by pit bulls?
Send her to Russia.
Maybe that's just me. Maybe I'm the only one who feels that way. Every time I hear the Queen talk, I have this desire just to see soccer hooligans jump her in a back alley and just beat her with pipes. I don't know why that is. It's just something about her tone of voice.
I only have one more. It's these two countries are woven together, says she.
I shall enjoy not only renewing old acquaintances and making new ones, but also recognizing the breadth and depth of the friendship we have shared for so long. We can celebrate the close and enduring associations which thrive between the United States and the United Kingdom.
Okay, that's it. Here's the thing, and I know that this is gonna sound like heresy to many members of the audience here in Blue State Portland. I'm just gonna say, really, of the two of them back to back like that, George Bush and the Queen, I find her far more irritating than I find him. I find Queen Elizabeth II, and I'm not saying like politically speaking, because I don't have any idea what her politics are. I don't even think she has politics. She just sort of sits around and just does that weird cup-handed wave at people. I'm just saying, if you're playing a George Bush soundbite back to back with a Queen Elizabeth II soundbite, him I can almost deal with. She's way more off-putting than he is. You know, at least he just is sort of dumb and harmless. She just seems like a horrible person.
Right. Well, meanwhile, there's a new poll out that puts President Bush's public approval at only 28%. Tony Snow says more self-identified Democrats were surveyed than Republicans. That's why that happened.
51% of those who responded were either self-identified Democrats or lean Democratic, as opposed to 34% Republican, lean Republican. So you got a pretty good skew here. And the Newsweek polls do tend to be outliers.
Americans only hear one side coming out of Iraq.
The headlines this week, eight Americans died. That is true. But on the other hand, you also had the fact that there have been very successful operations against bad guys. And you have
bad
guys. Some pretty significant seizures, whether it be in weapons caches or insurgents or killers that they've gotten.
Is that really how our government officials are speaking now, that we are over there fighting against, and I'm quoting now, bad guys?
Bandidos.
Serious? Hooligans? Really? Is it? Tony Snow is speaking like a 1955 Hopalong Cassidy serial? I mean, that's just retarded that we're over there. We've got victories against. Imagine Ron Ziegler saying that for the Nixon administration. We're over there fighting in Vietnam against bad guys. Like we're all 9 years old and chasing each other around the old homestead with cap pistols. Jesus, God Almighty.
Tony Snow says these polls are fluid, unpredictable, and subject to change.
If they try to get all their guidance simply from the poll questions, then all of a sudden it turns out that a lot of the things that have been stoutly opposed by some of the political class turn out to be things that have actually provided a basis for hope and success in Iraq. They'll have to answer for that, too.
Bad guys. By the way, I'm sure that any moment now we'll begin flying all our flags at half staff for all the soldiers that are getting blown up every day. It's going to happen any second now.
Yeah. Meanwhile, authorities are searching for clues in an explosion at the Vegas Strip Hotel parking garage, leaving one man dead. Police spokesman Bill Cassell says around 4 o'clock this morning, an employee of the Luxor was off the ship, went to his car on the top floor of the hotel's parking garage, and then, ba-boom.
When this individual reached for and moved that small object, it exploded. He was transported to an area hospital where he subsequently died.
I don't understand.
There was an object on top of his vehicle.
That's bizarre.
Las Vegas.
That's so little.
What happens in Vegas?
I was just going to say. Totally. I don't know how to tie it into that somehow, but there's a joke there somewhere. That's full on like Lefty Rosenthal.
Yeah.
Business. Turning the key. Well, I was in charge of the Tangiers. Then I blew up.
Jesus.
All right. I thought that those days were behind us, but, you know, what are you going to do?
Well, they're coming back.
Good people are nostalgic.
The victim was the intended target of an explosive device.
We do believe that this was a homicide that simply had an unusual weapon which was used to kill the victim.
Excellent. Well, I think it's high time that Vegas become more interesting. We bring back the old-fangled mafia-based excitement in Vegas. Well done. Rick, did I just hear the president, this email says, did I just hear the president claim that the British Empire has spread freedom and liberty for hundreds of years?
Yes, that's true.
Rick, ask the Indians.
Yeah.
Ask the people in India. If by freedom he says you mean an oppressive monarchy, sure. Ask the Irish how they feel about the British spreading freedom and liberty for hundreds of years. He signed it. P.S. I wish the Queen had referenced us as the colonies in that. Let's see. What else do we have here? Rick, the Queen sounds like a computer programmed with a British accent broadcasting your impending doom over a citywide PA system. That totally is. You have 5 minutes to reach minimum safe distance before implosion. She does sound like she's passively relaying some sort of terrifying information to you. Here's Tim Riley, my friends.
Well, Portland now reigns as the ninth capital of the world. This comes to us from the Chamber of Commerce, I guess. More than 1 in 4 pocket knives nationwide, 9 of 35 called the Portland area home. The knives, they produce a range from tactical blades to emergency and military use, to artisan knives for collectors, to multi-tools and pliers, and bottle openers for the everyday consumer. Yes, Portland is a city on the march.
The city of knives.
Mm-hmm.
I'm writing that down. That's going to go in the Portland song.
More than 1,200 people in the Portland area draw paychecks for the manufacturer of knives. By the way, the knife cluster can't compete with Nike, Adidas, and Columbia Sportswear in terms of size and impact, but it's welcome in a region that tends to be dominated by small business. Why Portland? Well, in 1919, as the Craftsman Style Homes transferred, cutlery opened up in Portland, and that was the first one. Others followed. This is a great place to make knives.
Of course. City of Knives. I'm totally writing that down. That's going to go. I'm going to put that on the website because somebody did send me the definition of the word stanza, by the way, and apparently I was just making crap up. But we do have the first four lines of the Portland Anthem. So we are working on the rest of those. So you can be submitting those to rick@rickemerson.com, by the way. All right. Let's do a couple more here, and then we'll take a break in a little while, and we'll come back with Jim Roop.
Well, two Springfield brothers who used a pellet gun and a wrench to rob shoppers waiting in line to buy the new PlayStation 3 game console are going to prison. 21-year-old Brandon Allen Howard was sentenced to more than 6 years, while his 19-year-old brother Stephen just got 8 years. Both pled guilty to robbery charges. The brothers hatched a devilish plan last November to rob what they call computer geeks waiting in line outside the Springfield Circuit City store. The pair stole a total of $120 from two people and got nothing from a third victim. That was that.
We got this. Rick, did you go see Alison Arngrim on Friday? I did not. My wife did. My wife said it was relentlessly profane.
It was. It was terrific.
My wife said that she...
It was the same thing she did here, but she kind of spiced it up just a bit.
Yeah, she said she just had... my wife said that she had a filthy mouth, which I think you underscored that. You said that it was relentlessly filthy.
Yep.
Well,
that's the kind of entertainment you want on a Friday evening.
Let's go see Nellie Olson use the C word a lot.
Now, the important thing is that did CeCe Slaughter still have the videos playing in the background?
I didn't notice that, and I'm a newsman to notice those things.
Did Laura notice? No, well, she was way in the back. She went with this guy she works with in back.
There's like hundreds of TV screens in there. They were distracting.
They got there a little late. She did not get to try on the Nelly wig. Apparently, there was some long line to try on the Nelly wig on stage. So there was. She and her friend Hart were way in the back, and I think he was clamoring to try on the wig, but I think it was a little... I don't think he was able to do that. This email says, I went Friday to see Alison Arngrim at Slaughter's with my friends. Shortly before the show started, but after a few cocktails... This is so great. Shortly before the show started, but after a few cocktails, it happened. Tim Riley walked past me. This is how this is written, by the way. I grabbed my friend and said... OMG, 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 it's Tim Riley, ! I'm totally geeking out. She told me to go say hi, and I said, quoting now, I can't go talk to him. It's Tim Riley, OMG, end quote. LOL 111-11D.
By the way, we were both mentioned on stage. Rousing applause.
Is that true?
Yeah.
I heard that she said something about being on the radio. I didn't know if she mentioned us specifically.
Yep, she mentioned you specifically. And then she mentioned something about me. Apparently, there's somebody starting some rumor that I look like some sort of albino.
Oh.
I guess it's a...
Did she call you an albino on stage?
Well,
I'm sorry, I don't mean to laugh.
See, so he obviously thinks he's autistic, and now Nelly thinks that he's albino.
That's like, well, apparently she received this information from a third party.
It wasn't me.
And in no way do you look albino.
No. You're just pale, like all of us.
Well, that's an internet. I can't help it. Both my parents were Caucasians.
It is a handicap, isn't it? Well, where is she from? Does she live in California now?
She does. She lives in Tahunga.
Well, that would explain it. If you're in California, come to Portland, you think we are all albinos.
Well, that's true, too.
I think it's a whole city of milk skins. Well, that's cool that she mentioned us. So
we have plenty of applause.
Well, there's that bootleg bumper sticker that's going around that says Rick Emerson Show, and then it says Tina Yothers thinks he's autistic. We'll totally have one of you at the Rick Emerson Show. Nelly Olson thinks Tim is an albino. Well, that's cool that our people were there.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see. Anyway, I said I can't go talk to him. It's Tim Riley. OMG! After the show, which was great, Allison was signing pictures in an adjacent room. The line was very long. By this time, I had had many more cocktails.
I was in that line, too.
By the time my friends and I got about halfway through the line, we were stopped in a tight place without much room for people to pass as they left from getting their pictures with Nelly. All of a sudden, I like how we just dispatched with calling her Allison. She just is... All weekend long, I was telling sort of like, yeah, I talked to Nelly Olson on Friday. All of a sudden, I turned around from talking, and there he was. Tim Riley, right there in front of me. Now that I was drunk, I was able to overcome my fears. And I reached out, this is the part that Tim Riley left, I'm sure, and grabbed his arm and said, this is what the person said now. I grabbed his arm and said, quote, Tim Riley, I love you. I listen every day. OMG, I'm assuming. End quote. I think I said more than that. But there are a few things, I think I said more than that, but there are quite a few things I don't remember from that night. All in all, a great time made better by the sighting of Tim Riley. Jeff, so there you go.
Yeah, there are quite a few people like that.
Fantastic. Clutching at the hem of your garment.
Well, I think the fact that we were standing in a room called the Rainbow Room made it all seem just a little bit more liberal than usual.
There's sort of an implied touching is okay.
Kind of
fantastic. All right, let's see. Rick, it sounds like the city's new slogan should be Portland. We'll cut you. Fantastic. Get a slice of Portland. Or how about this? Rick, it sounds like the city's new motto should be Portland. Shut up or get stabbed. Excellent. Thank you, sir. All right. Well, let's do one more. We'll break and we'll come back and talk to Jim Roop.
Meanwhile, an Idaho man has been arrested on allegations of illegally hunting wild turkeys on the Snake River near Ontario while boating and drinking.
Sarah's friends hunt wild turkey on the weekend.
Christopher Eversall of New Plymouth, Idaho, facing counts of hunting turkey during prohibited hours, being minor in possession of alcohol, wasting turkey, and taking a turkey in closed season. He was arrested also on an outstanding warrant for doing the same thing in Baker County. He's a repeated turkey poacher.
All right. Well, let's beat him. Rick, I think it's safe to assume that Paris will be fine with two pair of underwear a week. It seems like that's two pair a week more than she currently uses. Thank you. Thanks. Thanks so much. No, really, you're too kind. Rick, the best part of the TV coverage about the Spider Boy last night, we should start calling him Spider Boy, showed the happy kid holding a water-filled medical specimen cup which contained one spider at the bottom and the other floating on top. He announced that he has named the spiders. Who knows what he named the spiders? Stinky and Floaty. Oh, to be nine years old and dumb.
He's going
to
be the coolest kid in school for the next
He's already the coolest
Stinky
kid.
Stinky and Floaty.
That's fantastic.
That's awesome.
Let's see, this guy pointed out something. If you were at the Carlin show on Friday, this guy pointed out something that I've been thinking about. He says, Carlin said he had three jokes for us Friday evening, but he only told us two. The mind trembles at what the third one was. This, if you saw Carlin on Friday, God damn, that guy was great. He was so great, and he just turned 69. The guy is almost 70. He makes me feel like such a poser. I mean, Carlin is so, and because his last tour was pretty disappointing. His last tour was right after he got out of rehab, and he wasn't very good. And I'll be honest about that. As much as a Carlin fan as I am, his last tour wasn't very good. He had just got out of rehab for alcohol and Vicodin, and he was just not. He was kind of dulled. He wasn't his usual blinding self. He was so great on Friday. I mean, he is 100 times better than I am on my best day, and he's almost 70. I mean, it's just unbelievable. But he has such a gift for isolating sort of absurdities in the culture that you don't really notice most of the time. But anyway, he did this. He had this one section. He does a lot of these where he'll break up larger sections with small sort of asides, which you'll notice is a thing that I kind of do too. Like at the top of the show where I had those three dumb jokes at the top of the show, he did a thing very similar to that on Friday where he had three incredibly profane short jokes. And they were incredibly profane and they were incredibly hilarious. And he's not a guy who tells jokes. He has a lot of observations and sort of rants, but he doesn't really tell jokes, which is why it was interesting when he did this small 5-minute segment in the middle where he said, "Now I've got three jokes to tell you." And what was so infuriating is he only told two of them. He never told the third joke on Friday. I thought I was the only one that noticed that. I was angered by that. So, in any event. So, no, sir. You're right. I noticed that, too. So, I'm going to have to go look online and see if anybody notes. If he plays another town and tells the actual third joke. Maybe that was the thing. He was just doing it to screw with us. We should break here. We'll come back. Jim Roop around the corner. More from Tim Riley. Later on, we got the top five coming up. I believe we're going to be talking to Peter Carlin later on in the day as well. 503-733-2970. We return after this. It's the Rick Emerson Show on AM 970 Solid State Radio. Don't go anywhere. It's Rick Emerson Show live from Portland. It's 503-733-2970. His email says, if Tim Riley isn't an albino, tell me, where did he get all that hair? All right, thank you, sir. Tim Riley is not an albino. We're going to stop that urban legend right here. We're going to strangle that in the crib, sir. 503-733-2970. You know what I mean. Hey, is that
I really don't.
Is that that protein bar that was in my desk drawer?
Yes, thank you.
All right. Don't ask me how long it's been there.
I'm sorry, it's good. I couldn't eat that sushi. It was all weird tasting.
I'm just screwing with you. It's from this morning. Well, that's because it's raw fish.
No, it isn't. It's imitation crab.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And
I know it's mind over matter. Sometimes I have foods, I just can't eat them for a while. I'm really weird like that, like eggs. This weekend I was eating eggs and they were just grossing me out, so I couldn't eat them anymore.
Is it because they're chicken fetuses? No, they're not fetuses. What are they? They're embryos. Is that the deal? What is an egg? An egg is an egg's an embryo, right? It's a chicken embryo? Oh. I guess we're doing this now. Let's welcome now to the Rick Emerson Show from Los Angeles, CNN radio correspondent James Roop. Hello, sir.
It's nice how Sarah can just make you change direction.
Really, her purpose here is to keep me on track when I'm heading off into the undergrowth thicket.
She's beautiful and talented.
I just can't figure. An egg is something, right? It's not a zygote.
I think it is a zygote.
I was thinking that when you were talking about that.
Can I just tell you this?
But it hasn't gotten to the blastial stage yet. It has not divided.
See, you're just making words up now. I don't even know what you're talking.
I am not making words up. I'm remembering my high school biology.
I don't remember anything about high school biology. All I remember is there's a thing, and then something happens, and then blah blah blah.
Mm-hmm.
That's it. Really, literally, that's
I enjoyed scrambling the brains of frogs. That was my favorite thing. When we were dissecting frogs, we actually had to kill them. You know, that was the fun part.
They actually made you...
Yeah, because you wanted to see the heart and everything beat, so what you do is you place the frog's neck...
Are you sure you did this in school? This wasn't like at home, just in your spare time to amuse yourself?
Yeah, we did it at school.
I don't...
Fine Catholic all-boys... school.
I went to Catholic school, too, and they had one of the various creatures that they made you dissect in science class.
Well, we had a cat, a rabbit, and frogs.
See,
and a pig.
I think we only got up to, frogs. I don't think they gave us, we're now out of the lunch hour, so I can safely discuss the dissecting of animals. I think the first thing we dissected was a tapeworm. I remember that. Boy, tapeworms are weird, too. They're not at all like you, I know that I'm horrifying everybody here, but tapeworms are not at all like you think they would be. You think that they're all flat and segmenty, and they're really not. They're sort of like, what are those things? Soybeans. They look like really long soybeans. That's exactly what... Think about that the next time you're at the Mongolian Grill. Tapeworms look like really long... We went from tapeworms to earthworms to crayfish, I think. And then perch. For some reason, we were dissecting perch. I don't know why.
Perch.
And then we went to frogs.
And you were cleaning it for your teacher.
Yes. And then we went to frogs, and I think that was it. I don't think we ever went to... who wants to hear the most horrifying story about dissecting an animal? Sarah?
Oh, sure.
Okay. So here's the most horrifying dissecting story, and this may revolt any number of people in the audience, but that's okay. We had a story earlier today about a guy who had spiders living inside his head, so really, it's all relative.
Yeah, I heard that.
That kid was right here in Oregon, too. The weird thing about dissecting frogs... And this is really horrifying, even to me, even now. And it was especially horrifying when I was a kid, because I used to have this terrible fear of spiders when I was a kid. I don't anymore. But when I was growing up, I was really an arachnophobe. Spiders really did scare the living crap out of me when I was younger. And I got over it when I was, I don't know, about 19 or 20. And I've told this story before. I lived in this apartment when I was just a young dirt heel disc jockey. I lived in this apartment that was just overrun with spiders. I mean, it's like, really, they could have picked me up and threw me out in the middle of the night if they wanted to. And I finally just had to make, I had to just have to make peace with it. I had to become zen with the spiders.
That's how I am with my ant problem right now.
The ants are fine. I don't understand your deal with ants.
No, it's annoying because I can't leave out any food, so if I leave out anything...
But you're not afraid of them.
No, I'm not afraid of them. They're just really annoying.
Okay, well, you know, but that's because they're industrious.
And then they'll just go away for days at a time, and then they reappear. Like, right this morning, they weren't there. Yesterday, thousands of them.
I think ants are great. My wife has a whole thing where she's afraid of just like the little black ants, like the little sugar ants. And I tell her she's just got to embrace it, because someday the ants are going to take over the world, and we are going to be their slaves. Someday the ants will take over the world, and we will be working for them in underground sugar mines. And
yeah, pound for pound, they are strong.
That, and, you know, and they've got their act together. Ants really, I mean, it is Adam, but they're way more organized than we are. Do you know what I mean?
They know the social structure.
That's it. And
they
stick
to it.
And that's exactly what I'm saying. And everybody knows their place in the ant world.
That's right.
What was my point?
Immigration rallies there.
That's Jim Roop who said that, by the way. Rick Emerson does not advocate, promote, endorse, or condone any such attitude. No, my point about the spiders is that blah, 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 blah. I had to become zen with the spider problem, but I was really terrified of them as a younger person. And so when I was in biology class, they made us dissect these giant frogs. I mean, not literally giant, but they were large. They were like bullfrogs. They were very big. But the deal is that to make it more interesting for us, they had fed the frogs right before they killed them. So it's like they feed the frog, and I guess they got a pretty slow digestive system. So they would feed the frog, and like a couple hours later, they would gas it. And then, like, whatever the frog was eating, you would still find. So, like, you would cut open the frog, and, like, in the stomach, it'd be, like, crayfish, whatever. Or, like, you know, flies or some crap.
We didn't gas them. We made them brain dead so that their organs were still, their heart was still beating.
See, how do you do that? How do you just make them...
So you
tortured them.
No.
They
couldn't feel it, probably. They were dead.
You put the little head between your fingers, and you bend its neck, and you stick a pin up there, and you scramble its brain.
This is the worst phone call we've ever had.
That's what we did. This was 1974, for Christ's
sake. 1974, and this was at the direction of a teacher, no doubt.
A biology teacher. A man of learned letters.
You're sure he wasn't like a mad scientist? Was he bald and did he say a lot?
Frankenstein, I presume.
Did he say a lot of things like, I will show them all!
To life!
In any event, so they fed these frogs and then, because we didn't kill them, they were already dead, we got them. But they fed the frogs and then the laboratory gassed them and then sent them to us. This one frog, this is so freakish. I don't know why, if they just had crap left over laying around the lab and they were just trying to, or if they were just, in retrospect, I don't know if it was the company that prepared the frogs just trying to screw around with us, like if they were just trying to F with us. But this one frog, they had fed it a tarantula. How freaky is that? So you're there, you're already a little freaked out because you're cutting open a frog. You cut open the stomach and there's a tarantula inside. I mean, that's kind of messed up.
Was it still fuzzy or did it have juices all over it?
No, it was pretty much still intact.
Wow.
It was a little freaky. Cut open a frog, there's a tarantula inside. I mean, it was sort of like some sort of biology pinata, you know what I mean?
Wow.
So they ought to do that, actually, with some of those. You know, like every, to get the kids a little more interested in science, every 50th frog got to have like a gold coin inside. A gold coin and some marzipan, you know what I mean? just to make it a little interesting for the kids. Hey, here's the thing. I'm not going to say that we lied to Laura Caviezel because we would never do that.
Right.
I only kind of passively care about this LAPD immigration rally thing. I really did want to call to see if you had any news or had anything about Paris Hilton.
Only that I would imagine an appeal is going to be filed. She has been speaking out a little bit to some of the paparazzi, saying that she was treated unfairly and that the sentence was unwarranted.
Really?
And but come on, man. She purposely and blatantly violated her parole.
Yeah, and by unfairly, she means the same way that everybody else would be treated. The same way that people without money are treated.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, that's the thing.
I did find out what she gets to eat in the morning.
Oh, really? Would you now?
She will get a piece of toast and a hard-boiled egg and, I believe, an orange.
Oh, that's so great.
And for lunch, a bologna sandwich.
It's so satisfying. I hope that, I mean, I wonder, because the paparazzi and the Perez Hiltons of the world are just so wired into every aspect of American life. I wonder if we're going to get photos of her in jail in
lockup. Someone was smart, they do a reality show in there.
Aren't they doing that with, is it Foxy Brown or is it Little Kim?
Oh, I don't know.
I know. See, and I know this makes me sound like a terrible white person, but it has nothing. I can never. They're both. I mean,
no, it was Lil Kim.
They were both popular at about the same time, and so I'm constantly getting the two of them. Who was the one that was married to Notorious B.I.G.? That was Faith Evans.
I don't know.
Female rappers all blend together in my head. Ever since the glory days of Yo-Yo, they all, really, if you're not Yo-Yo or Michelle Lay, they all blend together in my head. But I who was the one that had the pasty on her boob?
Little Kim.
So it's her, right? I think she's going to jail because she wouldn't.
I think she already went to jail.
But did she go to jail because she
didn't
wouldn't.
Did she lose a lot of weight and kind of endorse the program?
I don't know, but
was she happy about her late weight loss or something?
There's some female rapper that's going to jail, and there's some sort of controversy about it because she wouldn't squeal on some of her posse that had like shot somebody.
Oh,
let's say posse.
No, but you know what I mean. Some of her peeps that it because there's all this controversy.
She already served time for that. She's already been in and out of jail.
Is that it? Because the tagline for the show is like she's not snitching or whatever. It's like she won't snitch and she's and her lips are sealed or her head is high and her lips are sealed. But she was going to jail because she wouldn't rat out like some of her pals or whatever. And there was a lot of scandal about like what message is this sending to the young people that she's going to jail because she won't turn in her pals and whatever. Blah blah blah. I don't even know how we got onto this, but a reality show with Paris Hilton. Because first of all, I think that hair is largely fake. I don't know that that's true. But I'm pretty sure that's a lot of fake hair that she's got there.
Well, she's going to be, I would imagine, isolated. Because can you imagine the women who'd want to just rough her up for no reason other than she's Paris Hilton?
Oh, look, let me tell you this. I really want to
rough her up, if you know what I'm
saying. I think I've cracked your code, yes. I mean, look, I want to rough her up. And by rough her up, I really just mean, like, I really...
You kick her ass.
Seriously, if you list up a lot of people that I could, you just want to get a free shot at, just one good punch, she's near the top of the list. If you've never done anything to me, She's never caused me any harm.
But she ticks everybody off because she's a bratty rich kid.
She is just a bratty. Is she? What is that? What is it South Park called? South Park had that episode where she opened her own store and it was called Stupid Spoiled Whore Incorporated or whatever. That was like her clothing line. Stupid Spoiled Whore Clothing.
There you go.
I mean, that she just makes people angry. And I heard, I don't know that this is true, but we heard a report that this judge that sentenced her got a standing ovation at some public event that he went to. And it was like, ladies and gentlemen, the judge that sent Paris Hilton to jail. And like everybody stood up and just gave that guy an ovation. God bless him.
And, you know, she's going to see the inside of that jail, and they're not going to let her out early. They're under too much pressure.
They can't.
To make her serve
yeah.
that sentence.
They can't. And now, are judges, like this guy, is he appointed for life?
This guy, yeah, he's.
So he has no motive to be nice to her.
No.
Oh, good. Good for him. God bless him. Now, let me ask you this. A listener named Ryan earlier today had the suggestion, and I think it's a fine idea. We were talking about the Rick Emerson show sending this judge like a fruit basket, like a thank you basket.
Find out who he is?
Yeah. Do we know his name? Do you know?
I can find out.
If you could find out, if you could, not that I'm trying to pile on and give you crap to do, but if you could find out and maybe drop me an email if you find out the judge's name or just how to, I wouldn't even know how to send him.
Well, I'll get that information.
Okay, yeah, we would love to send him just a little thank you basket for doing what clearly needed to be done.
Mm-hmm.
I'd be happy with that. And then, this has just been handed to me by Tim Riley at the AM 970 news desk. Apparently, I don't know if you took this thing, the Phil Spector. Case?
Yeah, that's where I am.
This phone message?
Yeah, you didn't hear it.
I haven't heard it. I'm just reading this story now. What is it that he left some...
Yeah, he left... They're playing about 6 phone messages. Well, they're in break now. They're about ready to come back sometime soon. But there's one phone message to this Dorothy Melvin, who claims that she was pistol-whipped and had a gun pointed at her by Spector back in 93. And she kept these phone machine messages for like 13 years. And they play them. And they played them in court. I mean, what a bomb that was. First of all, I was shocked she had those tapes.
Right.
You know, I mean, that was the first thing. And then we weren't ready for them. You know, usually we get a little hint about what's coming up.
Sure.
We weren't ready for it at all. And it was really funny because everybody's mouths are wide open and going, oh, geez, he's fried now. But one message is, oh, Dorothy, I'm really sorry. That gun should not have been there. You deserve better than that. The next message is, I expect a return call. And be careful what you say to me, because nothing you can say is worth your life. You know, I mean, it's pretty much that kind of divide, Dorothy. Oh, it's very scary, man.
Crazy.
Very scary. And the defense is just going, oh, God.
Yeah, she...
What do we do now?
It's here, the nearly 14-year-old recordings were left for Dorothy Melvin after she told police he pointed a handgun at her. He makes reference to lawyers in one of the messages telling Melvin, quote, I'm going to get you for what you did.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, Phil. Phil is going to be going away for a while, I think.
He's not going to... You got to see him, man. He's not going to make it through the trial.
Does he look like he's on the edge of a breakdown?
I think he's going to wind up in the hospital.
Jackson style?
What's that?
Jackson style?
No, a real kind of illness.
Oh, really? Like you think the trials are taking a toll on him?
I think it's killing him.
Yeah.
I think it's sucking the life out of him.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's a guy who ought to get a reality show, maybe. All right. Well, fantastic.
It's something else, son, I'll tell you.
God bless him. God bless this wacky world that we live in. All right, my friend, we will talk to you in the near future. Enjoy the rest of your Southern California afternoon, my friend.
Thank you so much.
There you go. Jim Roop, ladies and gentlemen, in Los Angeles. All right, there you go. Jesus, it's 1:30. Where does the time go? Let's see. Rick, you and Jim were lucky. My biology class had to kill our frogs by whacking their heads against the countertop.
But we didn't have to kill anything. We just got cow eyeballs.
Oh, yeah. No, we did that, too.
Instead of cut them open, it was all blue inside?
I forgot about that. Cow eyeballs. And then what other eyeballs did we do? It was from some fish. It wasn't perch. It's like trout or something. We did like trout eyeballs, I think.
Yeah.
I think frogs was as far as we went. I don't think they had enough money for us to do like suckling pigs or anything. Yeah, I don't know. I can't remember what else we did. All right, well, there you go. 503-733-2970. Let's take a break here. We'll come back. Tim Riley around the corner at the Ministry of Truth. Later on, top five. And more to come, plus our hunt for the second worst story in the history of the world. You stay there. It's the Rick Emerson Show on AM 970. Solid State Radio. Don't go anywhere.
show. 503-733-2970. Thank you for coming by. We're just seconds away from Tim Riley, the Ministry of Truth. Coming up at 2 o'clock, we'll talk to the Oregonian TV critic, Peter Carlin, and so forth. Hey, I see the family whoring of Elliot Smith has begun. Looking at the front page of the living section here in the USA Today. Or USA Today, in the Oregonian. New Moon, it says, a compilation of... This is always something that bodes well for the music. A compilation of unreleased Elliot Smith songs. Documents the City of Roses imprint on a late singer-songwriter's career. So crap that was not good. I hate to sound cynical about this, but come on. You know, when they put out a CD of unreleased music after a guy died, that's always some crap that was finished by other artists after he killed himself that wasn't good enough to come out while he was alive. That's obviously what this is. Let's see. A double album, blah, blah, blah. Features 24 songs he recorded between 1994 and 1997. During this creatively fertile period, Smith still lived in Portland, released two of his best-loved LPs, blah, 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 blah. All right, well, whatever. You know, I just don't care enough about Elliot Smith to continue. Here's the Ministry of Truth, your president, prophet, seer, and revelator.
And now, from the Ministry of Truth, this is Tim Riley.
A construction worker rushed to the hospital this morning after the large lift he was in tipped over. This happened in front of a condominium site at Northwest 24th and Irving Street. Guys, in one of those crane baskets 80 feet off the ground on a steep road when the lift suddenly tipped and crushed several cars.
Oh, damn.
It appeared that he stayed tethered to the basket as it fell and crashed into an outbuilding. People in the area said they heard a huge crash and then screaming. The man was conscious and was rescued, taken to the hospital.
Wait, so he's in what? So it was
one of those big baskets.
Like a cherry picker?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. How did it tip over?
Does it say? It was on a steep road.
He crushed
several cars.
Oh, God damn.
Yeah.
How did he even survive?
Yeah, it's pretty amazing.
So did they have his name?
No, they don't.
Did the basket part of it crash into something, you said?
Yeah, it did. It crashed into an outbuilding.
I'm not sure what that means. I don't
maybe
know.
Maybe a honey bucket or something. Well, that would be even worse,
wouldn't
it?
Oh, no, really?
Well, I'm not sure.
An outbuilding.
An outbuilding is usually a...
That sounds like an outhouse.
Yeah.
Yes. Imagine, how high up was he?
Four stories.
Imagine you're four stories up in a crane, it tips over and you crash into an outhouse.
Mm-hmm.
I don't mean, he's alive, so I can make this joke.
As far as we know, he was conscious when he was rescued.
Okay, so he's not dead, to our knowledge, so I can make this. That's just sad. That's like being attacked by bees, and then, you know, and then you stumble and fall into an open sewer. Mm-hmm. That's no good. Man, you know, I gotta tell you, I went up in a cherry picker once when I was a kid, and it's not like I'm terrified of heights, but that'll unnerve you a little bit. And every time I see a guy up in one of those cranes, I always wonder, the wrong breeze comes along, or the earth shifts just enough, and man, that thing tips over. That is no good. That is a bad way to go. All right.
The man responsible for sending 10 people to the hospital and forcing 21 of his neighbors out of their apartment yesterday said he was trying to create an alternative fuel to help the environment. Now, firefighters responded to the last edition apartments at the Southeast 12th and Harrison after a self-described inventor, Tom Gaboro's experiments in science went awry. He was preparing about a year for this experiment, which he conducted in a garage he rents. He said he combined chemicals, including mercury and aluminum, in hopes of generating a reaction that will produce hydrogen. He hopes to harness that hydrogen for power. Well, it didn't happen that way. Instead, he started a fire. He said, oh, no, what have I done now?
Oh, my God.
He claims he was teaching himself chemistry. Firefighters quickly extinguished a blaze, and they were more worried that the thick smoke might cause health problems. So residents have been sent to OHSU for testing like guinea pigs, and the building has been sealed up. Now they have to find a new place to stay, at least temporarily.
He does know that he created a flammable fuel, though, so mm-hmm. There was success on that front. David, you're on the Rick Emerson Show. What's up?
Yeah, Rick, yeah, you were talking about the sushi. Now, first off, not all sushi is raw, so that crab meat here in the States,
yeah,
it's always cooked when they use it, yeah. Sushi. But I just got back from Japan a short while ago, and, you know, I had some sushi there, but the stuff they feed you in Japan is the stuff your mother told you would kill you.
Well, I don't... It just seems like you're asking for trouble if you're eating a lot of raw animal. You know what
well,
I mean?
Well, now get this. See, my son reads Japanese, so we were in a sushi place. You know, he orders this thing. I didn't even notice. I said, well, what is that? it looked like, it looked really strange, you know, it looked like gobs of gray snot. I mean, just, it was all mucusy looking, really.
It's all mucusy looking.
What do you got there? He says, oh, well, here, look at the menu. And he, I point at, well, what does it say? Well, loosely translated, it's crab guts.
Fantastic. Thanks so much. Thanks for that.
Yeah.
I appreciate it. All right. Yeah. Oh, sadly, it doesn't look like we're going to be able to continue that. I should have lost that call right when he made the snot reference. That's no good. All right, here's Tim Riley. I regret taking that call. Here's Tim Riley.
All right. Well, the Yankees are honoring a Bronx grandmother of 8 for her brave actions when she foiled a robbery at her store where she works by smacking a robber over the head with her 16-inch miniature Yankees baseball bat. Well, at Yankee Stadium yesterday, the team captain presented 68-year-old Vera Carrillo with a real full-size bat. Just in time for the next robbery. Apparently, she whacked the guy over the head with a mini bat. He dropped the money and ran out of the store.
This email says, Rick, I saw Nellie Olson on Friday. We all had a chance to ask her a question on paper. I asked her how she enjoyed the interview with Rick Emerson and crew. When she said the question out loud, the crowd went wild.
They did.
You'd think they'd won the lotto or something. And this is another Rick fan. So, okay, so there you go. Well, there you go.
That's cool.
Good to know. All right, here's Tim Riley.
Well, a drunk driver apparently has crashed into Dan's pawn shop again. His name is Mamazuka. Apparently, he doesn't have a first name. Maybe that's the whole name. There was extensive damage to the pawn shop. The exact amount of damage hasn't been calculated. Mr. Mazuka was taken to the hospital for minor injuries, and it's not the first time that a car has crashed into Dan's pawn shop. In 1992, a man attempting to elude police crashed into it, and he was killed at the scene. Meanwhile, Clear Channel said today they're delaying a vote on a proposed $19.35 billion buyout of radio stations that it owns. The company's already received enough proxies to defeat the proposed buyout, which would require a two-thirds vote of approval. A shareholders' meeting scheduled for Tuesday was postponed till May 21st. A Clear Channel turned down a similar proposal last week, saying the charges would delay voting up to 90 days, and they're not certain if it would be approved.
Who are they selling the radio stations to?
Anybody who wants them. They're all ruined now.
For sale. Some busted radio stations. For sale.
In the industry that we ruined.
For sale. Some crap stations. Here you go. Everything must go.
They were selling its television stations and nearly 450 radio stations.
All right, so go pick those. Yeah. You're really right. It is like selling a burned out building, sort of. Here you go. Have a car that's missing its engine and three of the wheels. Good times. All right. It's so sad. I'm saying, I don't mean to be so cynical about it, but you're right. You really are true. It doesn't really matter who they sell them to at this point.
No.
Just pointless. Just a waste.
They're abandoned buildings with music being played on little boxes.
just a waste of space and spectrum at this point. Oh, good God. All right.
A man vomits drugs and the plane turns around.
Fantastic.
A passenger in an Australian-bound plane vomited into a nylon bag.
Oh, I don't know.
Causing the plane to return to Vietnam.
I don't know why the nylon bag part of that bothers me so much.
That's the best they have in Vietnam.
In a nylon bag. You know why? You know why that's so horrifying? Because that doesn't catch the vomit so much as it strains the vomit.
Totally.
That's what it is. You know what that is? That's like that's like pouring a bunch of eggs into some fishnets. That's exactly what that's like. The larger chunks sort of stay behind, and the rest just goes right onto the floor. Vomited into a nylon bag. And it's so telling that welcome to Vietnam Airlines. If you vomit, you vomit into a nylon. We don't have paper bag. Maybe that's not in keeping in line with the diversity training I took Friday, but apparently they don't have paper in Vietnam. Oh, good God. You haven't taken the diversity thing yet.
Damn it, no, I've got it.
That today.
I know.
My close of business today, Sarah.
I'm going to do it right after the show, Rick Emerson, if you give me the phone number.
All I'm saying, I don't have the phone number. I don't have the phone number. Apparently you can't take it now. Well,
it's kind of strange because they have...
Nice working with you.
Well, they ask questions about the kind of people we don't see around here, so there's no rush.
In a theoretical environment, somewhere other than Portland, you work with someone who's not white. How should you deal with that? Should be one of the questions.
I think they'd be more lenient knowing that.
Seriously, they really should have market-specific versions.
We are thinking about hiring such people, but we haven't gotten around to it yet.
We haven't voted.
We're thinking about paying women a little bit over minimum wage.
There ought to be market-specific versions of that diversity test. You realize that a non-white person has been hired at CBS Radio Portland. Do you A, show the shock on your face, B, have an expression of surprise come from you verbally? Oh, good God. It really is a relentlessly white city we live in. Yeah. So I don't know that...
Blame it on Lars. He's the one that started this trend.
Let's blame everything on Lars.
Yeah, he still complains.
Oh, God. He really ought to change the name of his program to White People Have It Really Badly. Oh, God. The diversity test is a little... It is interesting. I will put it that way. And there were a couple of questions, I swear to God. And the final question on the test, I really didn't know the answer to. I really didn't... And maybe you remember the question, Tim, and I won't say what the answer was that I gave, because I don't wish to appear that I am prejudicing Sarah's responses. But there was this final question on the diversity test, and I think everybody in the show has taken it but Sarah now. And it says, what is the role of radio announcers in terms of diversity? It was like, A, make the world more hostile and intolerant. B, this is really one of the questions. B, train people to act like DJs.
Yeah.
And I don't remember the fourth one was, but the third one is C, challenge the audience's perceptions and beliefs. Now, I'm not going to say what my answer was, again, because Sarah still has to test.
Oh, great.
But I'm saying I honestly didn't know what the correct answer was. And I finally
is that our role? Are we supposed to challenge people?
I can't say, Sarah. It would be wrong of me to... it would be wrong of me to tell you, because, again, you still have to take the test. And I don't wish for it to seem as though I am tipping my hand about what the correct answer is. I'm just saying I had to finally on that last question, I just flat-out guessed. And I got it right. But it really was a guess, because all of the answers seem wrong to me.
I had to call an Asian friend for help. It was kind of like a lifeline type of thing. I really had to answer.
That's one of the options. One of the options is call a minority.
Well, we're entitled to one call, I believe, in that test, if you don't know the answers.
We have a pool of minorities standing by, waiting to take your call. If you work at CBS Radio Portland and are unsure of what a minority is, please call this number and we'll clarify for it. All right, well, let's do... Jesus, it's almost 2. What are these people calling about? Well, let's find out. Hi, Rick Emerson Show. Hello.
Hello.
Hi.
This is Jeff. I'm calling from the Dalles today, where it's 84 degrees.
That's gripping, Jeff. Thanks for sharing that with us.
Hey, I wanted to make an observation about the guy in the cherry picker falling 4 stories.
Yes.
If he was 4 stories up at about, 10, 11, 12 foot up per story, at a 45-degree angle, he's actually falling about 68 feet.
Okay.
And you know when you take a fly swatter and, like, smack a fly, how the outside and fly swatter is traveling much faster than, say, your hand is?
Sure.
That guy must have, like, really flacked into that outhouse.
Well, and see, we're unclear about whether he's... I mean, he is alive, apparently. We don't know the extent of his injuries, but that does seem like a bad... That seems like a bad accident to have.
It's kind of like dropping a book on a cupcake, I'm thinking.
Thank you, sir. I'm sure his family is taking solace in your remarks.
Yeah.
He knew. David had gone too far. Rick, I read in the beloved Purple section of USA Today that Donny Osmond has the new album out. Is Scotty J going to be working and getting an interview? You can discuss your time in Utah and help spread the Mormon love. Blah, 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 blah. Yeah, I don't know.
Love songs of the 70s.
I can't imagine who out there would be lined up to buy a Donny Osmond record, but I don't even know why that guy tries to sell anything outside of Utah. I mean, it is like a weird dividing line. Like, it sounds like a joke, but inside Utah, the Osmonds are still huge. The Osmonds have got their own stage, their own sound stage and a studio and a whole, like, little television. It's like a miniature television city in Utah that is just like for Osmond stuff. I mean, they really are still massive there. Them and Howard Jones for some reason. Let's do one more and then we'll take a break here.
One more or what?
One more piece of news.
Oh.
In the meantime, I'll read this about cherry picker accidents. Wait, hold on. I should have been prepared with the cherry picker.
I barely knew her.
Rick, a guy I knew in high school fell 40 feet from a cherry picker and landed on his face.
Oh.
He lived, but required months' worth of reconstructive surgery and a wig. A few years later, the same guy was working for a paving crew and got his foot stuck in the paver. Paver?
No, I barely knew her.
So first he falls off a cherry picker. Wouldn't you think you'd stay away from construction jobs at this point? He got his foot stuck in a paver. It ripped his foot off from the ankle down, and now he has to wear a prosthetic. God's honest truth. Worst luck ever. Yeah, the thing is, you want to be friends with a guy like that because his luck is so bad that it sort of absorbs the bad luck from you. It's like being friends with a guy in Def Leppard. Pat, you're on the Rick Emerson Show. Hi.
Hey, Rick.
Hey.
Yeah, I have a quick question comment. If the correct answer to that diversity test is number C, challenge the audience's thoughts and attitudes.
Yes, sir.
Whatever that's pretty bad about making an assumption on CBS's part that our thoughts and attitudes need to be changed.
Nope. Note that I am not. I am not indicating or in any way tipping my hand as to which the correct answer is, sir.
But the audience needs to know, Rick. We need to know just how smug CBS is.
I will take the quiz.
I can't reveal anything until Sarah
tells. No, you know what? And I'll go take it during the break.
Yeah, you get a call, and then they'll give you a little password.
Okay.
So in the coming days, will it be revealed to us?
Yes, I was going to take it on the air. I was going to actually take the diversity test on the air. Maybe you should take yours on the air.
I can take one on the air.
Okay, Sarah will take her diversity test on the air. That way you all can learn, the answers. The best part about the CBS diversity test is how they actually, as they go along and they illustrate story problems, you know, like, and it is stories, I can't remember the actual names they use, but it is things like, you know, Huang is a new assistant who works in, you know, the traffic department. Huang, a man of Korean descent, works in, and then, like, in case you're not sure what a Korean person looks like, they actually have a picture of him. So, and then standing next, and then by way of comparison, standing next to a white person. So that we as white people here can look at it and say, Huang, he's that one. You know, it's really just like the most ridiculous thing. It's like bad ethnic clip art.
And Rick, if the answer is C, indeed, can we somehow call through or get a memo to the personnel department in New York to ask them? We in Portland would like to know why it's thought that our attitudes need to be changed.
You know, you should quit taking it so personally, Whitey.
Okay, thanks.
All right,
Rick.
All right. So just, all right. Let's all calm down. All right, thanks. Come on. Seriously.
We can write to Andy Rooney.
Yes, sir. I mean, yeah, go call Bernard McGurk. Start complain to him about it, friend. All right, 503-733-29. That's the problem with white people. Always complaining. All right, we have to break here. All right, speaking of complaining white people, we will return with Peter Carlin around the corner. Who's going to come at you about something or other. 503-733-2970. It's the Rick Emerson Show on AM 970, Solid State Radio. Don't go anywhere. Emerson Radio Program. It's 503-733-2970. Coming up at 3 o'clock, it's Tom Likas, Donna Mike at 7. In just a moment, we'll get to Peter Carlin from the Oregonian. This is Chuck. Chuck with...
Hey, Rick.
Hey.
Hey, I just want to say, I think as an agnostic, I'm neutral on this, and I just want to give you my evaluation of what, if there is a God,
now,
what he's trying to tell the people.
Is this about Kansas?
Yes, it is. Greenburg, Kansas.
All right, here's what we're going to do, sir. We're going to give you a second to ponder whether or not you really want to make this statement about Kansas. Hold on just a moment. Just think about this. Now, Chuck, have you pondered whether you really want to make this statement?
Yeah, I believe I'm going to go first.
Okay.
All right. I think what God's trying to tell these people is build your mobile homes and your churches out of meteorite.
Okay, that's actually pretty funny. Okay, thank you.
Peace out.
Thanks so much. All right. That's like somebody asking, why don't they just make planes out of whatever that black box is made out of?
Ah!
All right, 503-733-2970. Let's welcome now to the Rick Emerson Show with a heart full of hate and a...
We really need to get him a theme song again.
Yeah, I know. I don't have... well, let me see. Hold on. Let me see if I can find something here.
How about a little something by the band Hot Buttered?
I'll see. This is the. Do they ever have other songs, do you suppose? Did they ever have, like, a follow-up to that?
God, no.
Let's see here. Hold on. I think I can probably find something. Wait, hold on a second. Wait. Hold on. Give me just a second.
It's almost a feeling of Scotty J trying to open that package.
Shut up. I'm trying to find something. No, I don't. Oh, wait, hold on. How about this? We'll just use the. No, that's less funny than I thought it would be. Peter Carlin for the Oregonian. Hello, sir.
Hey, man.
Hey, so let's talk about Lost.
Okay.
Now, here's the thing. As they say, full disclosure, I don't watch Lost anymore, and I haven't for a while. But you are saying that it's less crap than it used to be.
God. You are so lame sometimes.
I'm sorry.
They just give radio shows to everyone, don't they?
Yes, they do. Yeah, apparently. Well, I...
And then you moved up a notch because that Imus guy got knocked down.
I'm one closer in line, yeah.
Yeah.
I thought you were going to say that I was just so cynical all the time, and I was, you know, it's not...
No, you're beyond cynical. You're more like a troubled loner.
I'm a bitter, crazed loner, polishing a gun, muttering about the time of cleansing. well, that's just at home. I watched the whole first season, and I got about halfway through season two,
mm-hmm.
And I will just... Don't give me your... let me ask you this, by the way, if I can just sidetrack myself for a second. Now, I, of course, you know, you and I don't have what they call an exclusive relationship, Peter Carlin. I believe that in romantic terms, one might call what we had an open relationship, where we're allowed to see other people. Now, I can see other critics if I like, you can see other radio hosts, but I will say this... And I'm not going to ask who this was, because I kind of don't want to know. It's a sort of a don't ask, don't tell. But somebody told me, I got an email from somebody last week, and they said, Rick, sometimes I hear Peter Carlin on with another radio host, and he sounds much more pleasant and animated on this other program than he does with you, Rick. They said, when Peter Carlin is on your show, he seems very dour and cynical.
Oh.
Now, do you believe that when you are on with other radio hosts, you are a more likable person?
I think the real me comes out with you.
All right. So really, you're just a bastard.
That's true.
Okay. Well, no.
Didn't I say that from the get-go?
No, that's fine. I sort of assumed that was the answer, actually.
Yeah.
And I just wanted to verify it. All right. So here's
I'm being polite. They're like company. You're more like family.
No, see, thank you so much. I do appreciate that.
Yeah.
I really do. Because we have, like, a lot of the CNN correspondents will come on and just say all kinds of vile things on this program that I know they would never say when they're on in, like, Decatur or something.
Sure.
So, well, anyway, so I got about halfway through season two of Lost. And I just sort of got the feeling that they were just making it up as they went along, and not in a good way.
Well, you know, it's fiction.
Yeah, I understand that it's fiction.
No, but no, you see, the thing is, I think that you have to be a little more patient with a show like that. Because, I mean, what appeals to me about that show is the fact that it's so wildly imaginative. And the fact, and if there are some episodes that kind of don't end up leading in a good direction, they kind of tack back ultimately. There's a certain amount making it up as they go along. You know, I think they know ultimately where they're going. They kind of know it, but you don't know every step along the way. And the fact that, and let's not also forget that they're doing at least through this season 22 episodes a year, 22 hours of primetime professional entertainment, cranking that stuff out. And can you imagine how much writing and thinking goes into that? How much work goes into producing those episodes and all that stuff? And it's like a factory.
Yeah, you could say that about any show, though.
I know, and most shows just suck. Whereas Law, or they go into certain patterns. It's like a show like Law and Order. It's like you could have that could be written by a computer. It probably is. Because they certainly don't have J.T. Dolan writing it anymore.
Right.
But, Yeah, but that's a little Sopranos reference for the cool kids. But but it's just... but yeah, so they make a few mistakes here and there. So what? I mean, and a few episodes of Lost can seem kind of disappointing, and then suddenly you hit a streak where, you know, you realize, wow, they're really onto something. They're operating on several levels at once. You know, this is really, really, you know, bracing, exciting action, entertainment, and yet the characters are incredibly rich, and you know, and you're learning new, you know, seeing them in layers that you never imagined before. But then also they're dealing with these larger, you know, really fascinating kind of philosophical issues about the foundations of society and of individual identity. And to me, it's just like, you know, it's one of the very, very few shows on network TV where when it's over, I sit around and I think about it and I puzzle through it and I'm entertained.
Is it your, and I'll just, first of all, let me say a couple positive things so that I am not accused of being relentlessly bleak about such issues. I will say, A, I find the sort of viral marketing, as they call it, to be fantastic, and the idea that they fill the show, the television show, with lots of little, I don't know, sort of little, you know, sort of little things, little not little tricks, but
gigos.
Yeah, I was gonna say gigos. That doesn't sound right either. But you know what I mean? Little sort of hints and clues,
yeah.
Little sort of throwaway references that then lead you to find things on the internet and
That stuff I don't pay attention to.
I really think that that's the more creative, from what I've seen, the more creative aspect of the show. Is it your belief? Do you honestly think that the creators of Lost have in their head a game plan and an ending that they know now? Are they working towards an already known ending?
Yes.
Really?
Yes.
Now, do you know that to be true, or do you just have a hunch?
They have said that is true, and I'm not so cynical that I just think that they're lying. I think that probably what happened was when they first envisioned the show, or, you know, at some point, not so long into, I think you can't open up a huge can of worms like that without having some sense of how you're going to resolve it. Maybe not every aspect of it. Maybe there are some things that popped up later, you know. I mean, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I'm absolutely wrong. But to me, I kind of feel like they have always been enough steps ahead in their own mind that it makes sense. Because there hasn't been... They're not wild contradictions. They're not whole episodes which then, you know, weeks later, oh, no, we were dreaming. You know, it's not like that. It's just, you know, I just really feel that, you know, I mean, what you really probably ought to do, young man, is go back and rewatch that second episode or that second season and, you know, get the DVDs and then get your way through the whole thing. Because at the very least, it's a fun way to spend, you know, that much time.
How long in television time have they been on the island now?
You mean in terms of the time?
In terms of the show's timeline.
I think it's somewhere between like 80 and 90 days.
Really? Okay. So maybe the problem, and I'll grant you this, maybe the problem is mine because I'm an idiot American with a short attention span, because I watched the first season on DVD, and I watched it in like 3 days.
Mm.
And so maybe that's what it is. Maybe I acclimated myself to getting answers quickly, and now it's just become tedious to see them dragged out. And also, the problem with Lost is it's like I've loved and lost, but I've been burned, I've been hurt before, Peter. I think that this gives me sort of weird echoes of the X-Files in some ways, because the X-Files got to that point where they were just jerking us around, where they were sort of pretending that they had a destination that they were driving the series to, and it turned out they never did. And they were just like making crap up as they went along, and it ended up being very, very unsatisfying. And so maybe that's it. Maybe I am preemptively skeptical of it because it seems so much like what Chris Carter did to us, you know, in the late 90s. So who knows? So maybe that's where that came from. Speaking of J.T. Dolan, and I'll go ahead and reveal this because it's not a spoiler anymore because it happened last night. So last night of The Sopranos, which was a great episode, by the way.
Yeah, it was. And particularly since the episode before was as a bit of a stutter step.
Well, you know what that episode before with Tony's gambling problem? That reminded me of that that Columbus Day episode or whatever it is they did. The Columbus Day Parade or that episode from a few years back that was just so ham-handed and
I didn't dislike that episode.
I mean, it was okay, but it wasn't great. Last night, though, was fantastic. And it was not just because there was violence, because I think a lot of times people feel like if there isn't a whacking, then they, they've been cheated somehow. But it was just a great episode. And I do feel like they've really addressed Christopher just slowly going off the rails. And, it was just a really richly developed episode. And I got to tell you, I didn't see it coming when Christopher whacked that guy. Not at all, any way.
Every time he goes storming into J.T. Dolan's apartment, that was the writer guy that he met in rehab a few years ago and kind of bonded with and desperately kind of wanted to have his life or be a part of his life because he had the showbiz career that Christopher desperately wanted. And he essentially just threatened and beat him into doing a variety of things for him, writing the proposal for the Cleaver movie.
Yeah.
And then writing the script. And, and the whole part where he, I can't remember what the thing is, when he needed JT to go tell Tony that the character in Cleaver, the mob boss,
was not based on him.
Yeah, he picks up his Humanitas Award, which Christopher calls the Humanitas Award, and beats him in the head with it to motivate him to go talk to Tony,
And those guys have such a weird relationship. But anyway, because there's that whole business where Christopher took that guy's car a couple years back because he got into him so deeply for like gambling or some sort of debt or whatever.
Every time he walked into JT's life, JT ended up getting punched in the face.
I just love that character because you can tell that, like, it is that whole business of once you get tangled up with a guy like that, how do you possibly unsnare yourself?
Well, he was one of the first, often when guys get whacked on that show, it happens because they've really kind of allowed themselves to be dragged down,
Yeah.
It's very rare that somebody, a complete innocent, someone's own actions haven't led to their demise. It's not like they all deserve whatever they did made them deserve to be killed. But and to some extent there have been some borderline cases, like the epileptic waiter that Christopher killed a few years ago.
Right.
But again, he was a little bit of a pill. He was badgering them for more of a tip, which is why he came storming out.
And they killed him in the alley or whatever.
Well, they hit him. They beat him up first, but then he began having a seizure, and they felt so badly for him, they shot him to death.
Boy, speaking, and that was Christopher and Pauly, I think.
Yes.
Boy, and let's just talk about Pauly Galtieri for a second. That character and that guy, is he not just the most palpable menace?
Yes.
I mean, that scene last night where he is just like, he's got his hands clenched on the wheel. More than anybody on that show, I think he embodies that dual sort of comic and menace all at once. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
That
mm-hmm.
scene where he's going over to Christopher's house to tear up the lawn, and he's just got, there's that long shot on his face where he's just like gripping the wheel, and he's just got that look that says kill. I mean,
Pauly, of all those characters, is the one who really has no human empathy. He absolutely cannot think beyond his own comfort, own well-being, and will actively, and the moment that's threatened, he just turns into a shark.
Right.
And, you saw it with his own mother, the woman he thought was his mother, who turned out to be his aunt.
Yeah.
And he just instantly, he doted on her when he thought she was his mom.
Which I think comes on the heels of him, wasn't he beat some other woman in the nursing home to death?
Oh, yeah, no, the other woman had, stolen something from his mother or something, so he went in to grab it back and then smothered her to death with a pillow.
Yeah, he's just a bad, bad guy.
Yes.
Just a terror, and of course, and in real life, he's a felon, isn't he?
Yeah, I think he's one of those guys they got who, actually did used to be in The Life.
Yeah, it's just that he's just creepy, and the guy just has, again, just a palpable sense of menace to him.
Tony Sirico. One of my friends who works in TV in New York told me he and his wife were at a party. They have friends in the Sopranos circles, and they were at some cocktail party, and Tony Sirico was there, and they went up to talk to him, and he was talking to my friend's wife, who's Italian, and asking after, their life and their kids and stuff. And so then he looks at my friend, who's an Irish guy, and he's I'm an American dude, but of Irish extraction.
Yeah.
And then he looks back to my friend Cynthia and says, why'd you marry Irish?
Jesus. It's just the whole thing, but just that guy looking at you just being able to shake your spine. I mean, it really would.
Yeah.
And then of course, the other big development last night was AJ, Anthony Jr.
Yeah.
Kind of Tony pushing him because he's so broken up over his girlfriend dumping him. And Tony, you know, pushing him into, you know, well, cure yourself with booze and whores, you know.
Exactly.
And,
yeah.
You know, and he ends up holding that guy down while they, like, burn his feet with acid or whatever. And so you can tell that they're obviously setting that up as the big turning point, the big push that turns him into, truly turns him into Tony Jr.
Yeah.
Because when he comes home, they ask him how things are, and he goes, oh, I'm just wired. You know, and he's wired.
He's
not
thrilled.
From,
yeah. He's kind of thrilled.
Not from coffee or, you know, meeting some chick or whatever. He's thrilled from, like, being part of a beatdown of some guy.
Yeah.
So that's going to end badly, I think.
You think it's going to end badly for him?
I don't know. I don't know, man. It just seems like, I don't know how the show is going to end, but it does seem like they're setting it up to have any number of possible downer endings, you know?
Oh, it's awful things are going to happen. And Tony's already sort of dropping it. He's sort of wanting to get in with the feds a little bit. You know, he's kind of like greasing that wheel a little bit. Christopher is already on the verge or beyond the verge of spilling the beans. I mean, he wanted to do that to JT, and he already is doing it to his AA, or on the very precipice of doing it, speaking in abstract terms to his AA sponsor, who, and God knows where that guy's from. I mean, is he a Fed? He
right.
could be. They could
right.
be cracking that whole case.
Right.
Through AA.
Let's see. We got a couple people have questions for you here. Let's see. Jim, you're on the Rick Emerson Show with Peter Carlin. What's up?
Yeah, Rick, how you doing
What's
today?
Up? What do you got, brother?
It was just on the internet news today that Abrams and I'm not getting the other name off the top of my head about the creators today signed a final deal with the network to air 3 more years.
A loss, yeah. That's Carlton Hughes
and
Damon Lindelof or whatever.
Yeah, those guys.
Yeah.
So it ends on a finite end date now. Well, see, that'll help if they actually.
It'll end in 2010. They're going to do 3 more seasons of 16 episodes each.
And it's going to end on episode 120, and they said they had a definite map as to what was going to happen.
Yeah.
And they admitted that they kind of fly off the handle and have episodes where nothing makes sense until like 4 episodes later, but that everything's in the bag and everybody's on board is signed on for that finite ending.
Cool. All right. Thank you, Jim. That's Jim. Let's get one more here. Let's get Frank. Frank, you're on the Rick Emerson Show with Peter Carlin.
Hey, Rick. What's up?
What's up?
I was just wondering if you're ever going to get into Heroes.
I don't, you know, Heroes, Peter, have you been watching Heroes? Because that's one of those shows that everybody tells me to watch and I haven't.
I've seen it. I don't like it at all.
Yeah,
I don't know. It's
in
like,
your face,
whoa, Frank. But it's just like, you know, I see it kind of it just seems kind of obvious and like a less smart version of Lost. I mean, and it could be that I'm missing something. It could be that there's a whole comic book
I think
element
you are.
To it.
It's actually a really good show. It's actually...
Well, I know a lot of people like
it.
I'm just not one of them. I mean, I find the characters don't interest me that much, and I find the whole and I've gone back to it and watched it. You know, like
subsequent
episodes.
Well, the balance between you know the good and evil, and it's kind of interesting how they're doing it. You know?
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, I know, and there are a lot of people who like it, and so it's just one of these things where I've kind of decided to sort of not write and talk about it that much because I'm feeling a little like maybe for whatever reason it just doesn't appeal to me, but you know, I mean, I just.
Well, it's one of those things that people keep telling me. Thank you, Frank. That's Frank there. That's one of those things that people keep telling me to watch, and I've heard enough people tell me to watch it that at some point I'll probably go back and watch it, like, on DVD just because I don't want to be out of the loop because, you know, I want to be a good geek. So,
you know, I just find it, it's, you know, I go back and watch it, like, my professional obligation or whatever, but it's just. It just never does anything for me. I just can't. I don't know what to say.
It's one of those things that, like, it's like every time I watch, like Natural Born Killers or something. Like, I go back and watch it, hoping it'll be better, and it never is. Like, I go back and watch, like, maybe it'll be good this time.
Yeah.
It's always just the same crap. Let's take one final call here because I want to know the answer to this one too, and then we got to move on to some other crap. Hey, you're on the Rick Emerson Show with Peter Carlin. What's up?
Hey, Peter, what do you know about the return of C-60? I thought it was coming back May 23rd, but are they getting another chance, or are they just going to let it run out?
Wait, what show are we talking
Studio,
about?
Studio 60. They're just going to burn off the remaining episodes? And
I believe so, yeah. I think they... I, the last thing I read was that they had torn down the set.
Oh, bastards.
Well, go watch 30 Rock instead. It actually turned out to be a much better version of the same show.
All right, there you go. That's right. Hey, by the way, Peter, before we go here, I got to tell you, if you have not already, you must go see the TV set, which is the new David Duchovny.
Yeah. Where's that playing?
It's at the Regal 10 downtown. They're right by the Flying Elephant Deli, that place.
Yeah, the Fox place.
I saw that this weekend. It is fantastic.
Okay.
It is unbelievably good. And it was written and directed by a guy who was sort of part of that Freaks and Geeks brain trust.
Yeah, and he's the son of somebody.
He's the son of Lawrence Kasdan, who wrote Big Chill and Empire Strikes Back. But it's really, really good.
Okay.
So you ought to check that out. It will confirm all of everybody's dark, bleak suspicions about the nature of network television.
Right on.
All right, Peter Carlin, read him in print in the Oregonian online at OregonLive.com. Thank you, my brother.
Hey, you bet.
There he goes, Peter Carlin. Back after this, ladies and gentlemen, with Tim Riley at the Ministry of Truth, plus Sarah Dillon. Learn diversity on a very special Rick Emerson show. Stay there. Back after this. Of CBS Radio Portland are typically A, white, B, Caucasian, C, European. Take as much time as you need. 503-733-2970. Thank you for coming by. It's the Rick Emerson radio program.
No, they said Bradley.
Oh. Ladies and gentlemen, he is your president, prophet, seer, revelator, and Nubian god.
From the Ministry of Truth, this is Tim Riley.
One person is dead after a car crash in Milwaukee home this afternoon. Happened at Southeast Riverway Lane.
No other details are available.
Terrible bad news out of Iraq this afternoon as six soldiers from Fort Lewis were killed by a roadside bomb blast, bringing the total number of soldiers in the base killed in Iraq to more than 100. There are six soldiers there, and that's all they're saying at the moment. There have been 105 service members from Fort Lewis killed in Iraq since the war began back in 2003.
I'd like to lighten the mood by noting that Sarah just got a question wrong on the diversity test. Now, by the way, and I want to clarify something right now.
Confusing.
Yes, being tolerant is hard. No, I'm just screwing with you.
Now I'm reading it and I'm an idiot.
But see, I want to clarify something right now. We have decided, actually, here's how we've decided, because I don't wish to be accused of influencing the answers of anybody. So what we're doing is Sarah's just taking the diversity test by herself, without our input, without sharing it, and then later on, after, if she passes it,
Okay, let me just read you this question.
Now, I will not weigh in on
it. Don't comment on it. No, it says, in a diverse workplace, everyone should act the same. And if it's a diverse workplace, I assume that everyone's acting diverse. So I put true, and it's false, because it said that everybody should be acting different. And I'm very frustrated. And now I look like I'm racist.
How clanny are you?
The little icon, I can't believe I got it wrong.
The little icon is half a hood.
And it has a big, mean, incorrect.
Okay.
Like if somebody wants to do their native dance in the middle of the afternoon, they should be permitted to do so. Dress in colorful costumery and whatnot.
Okay. Yes. All right. So we're just going to let Sarah continue an attempt to pass. Did you forget to get another one wrong?
No, I'm nervous because it's between two questions.
Uh-oh.
Oh, wait. Maybe this is it. I'm going for D. It's incorrect.
Ah.
Are you kidding me?
There is a racist. There is a racist. Really? You got another one wrong? Have you considered the fact that you really are a bigot, Sarah?
What happens if I fail this?
You get to work for NBC.
Yeah.
Oh, crap.
I'm gonna work for Denny's. Here's Tim Riley.
How about Cracker Barrel? They'd welcome all failed CBS employees.
Genius. We are, by the way, again, we are not revealing the questions to the diversity test quite yet until, I mean, if Sarah passes this, then we'll act it out again tomorrow. But we're just going to let her focus on actually taking the test right now. Here's
Here's Tim Riley. It's all very awkward. You got one right, finally?
I got one right.
Hurrah, you are slightly less racist.
God.
All right. Here's Tim Riley, the Ministry of Truth.
Well, make sure you enjoy all the sunshine this afternoon. Temperatures will make it feel like it's June. It's going to be around 76 degrees, so it's probably hot out in downtown Portland as we speak. Skies will cloud up a bit, but partly cloudy skies and mild weather will return for the rest of the work week.
Look at that, late in the mood.
Ha! I'm trying not to be racist, Tim.
I don't think that has as much to do about racism as people are supposed to dress as they please and sing whatever songs they want.
And when they feel pray to the gods of their choice.
Mm-hmm.
And so forth.
Right. We're all chuckling about this. Now I'm really nervous.
Well, we're chuckling because we passed. We passed. Scotty, did you pass the diversity test? Hold on. Let's find out. Let's find out how Scotty.
Scotty J, this is David Cassidy. I don't know what else to say except...
You're not going to amount to jack squat!
Scotty, please summon him to the studio.
Beam us up, Scotty.
End of message.
Welcome now to the Rick Emerson Show, our intrepid PA.
I don't think Scotty has to take this.
Scotty, did you take the diversity test?
I believe, yes.
Did you pass?
Because you were saying some other tests. I missed one on the very end where it was a recap.
You missed one?
Yeah.
So you are less racist than Sarah Dillon is.
I
never would have guessed.
Well, sir, are these the pre-questions or are these the actual test questions?
Well,
I don't know.
It said correct and incorrect when she
was
answering.
In the very beginning, they're...
They gave some warm-up.
Oh, these are test...
Yeah, that's okay, what... Okay, warming up. Really funny is I passed that 100%,
sure.
And then when I got to the very end where it was 10 real questions,
yeah.
I missed... Question number two.
I see. So when it counted, when it was really important,
and, but the
failing.
Thing is, mine was half right, but you don't get a half right. It was politically correct, but it was like one of those
such a tool.
A and B are.
Did you
correct,
really just say
where I just picked?
Did
B.
you really just blame something on politically correctness?
Well, I was looking for the word diverse, but right. I said political correctness instead.
Do you believe...
You don't deal with the gardeners directly.
I believe I'm a very diverse individual.
Do you... You're not. You're the least diverse individual we've ever met. Do you believe that you were penalized on the test because of your whiteness?
Yes.
Get out. Get out of the studio. Leave now. All right, here's Tim Riley.
And when you're done with that, it's the advantages of email.
Yeah, is that the one that says, like...
I haven't done that one yet.
I think the gist of that one... I don't think I've taken that one either. I think the gist of that one is don't print out pages of corporate secrets and then just, like, hand them out to guys at the bus station.
Hmm. Here's more than...
Just read the radio and television pages every day. All the company secrets are spelled out.
Seriously, just read
R&R.
The R&R Daily.
They know more than we know.
It really is true. Read the Daily Billboard facts, and it's everything's in there. CBS to sell off holdings in 15 states. Meanwhile, the people in those markets have no idea.
No.
All right, here's Tim Riley.
Well, Oprah Winfrey, for the first time, is endorsing a political candidate, but you can't guess who it is.
Is it Barack Obama?
It is.
Oh, my God, I'm stunned.
She can sell books, but can she get people elected?
Yes. Yes, the answer is yes. I'm telling you right now, you mark my words, and people can laugh at this all they want, but it's true. Whoever Oprah Winfrey endorses will be elected president of the United States. I'm telling you, I will stake my reputation on that right now. Whoever Oprah Winfrey endorses will be elected president, or quite possibly vice president, depending on how the ticket shakes out. But the person that Oprah Winfrey endorses will end up in one of those offices.
Hmm.
All right.
Oh, at the White House dinner tonight, along with the Queen, who's been invited here? David Gregory and his wife. Let's see here. Nancy Pelosi. Josh Bolton, Condoleezza Rice, Trent Lott, Robert Gates, and Nancy Reagan.
I didn't even know she was alive.
Also, Elizabeth Hasselbeck from The View.
Really? Well, she's hot. Is Nancy Reagan still alive?
Yeah.
Boy, I bet she just looks like a chicken bone.
She was at that debate the other night, but they didn't show us.
It just looks like a chicken bone kind of wrapped in skin. Rick, about diversity tests. I was told one time that the majority of my coworkers were upstanding Christians, and therefore I need to be sure to respect the cultural diversity of the workplace. I am the one who must act a certain way to respect the cultural diversity of my Christian coworkers. The whole incident resulted from an email wherein I asked if payroll was trying to, quote, jack us out of our earned hours. This was taken as a sexual comment aimed at the Christian woman who worked in human resources. And then he signs it, I hate my coworkers. I really do. Well done, sir. Thank you. All right, it's 503-733-2970. We'll take a break back after this. Don't forget, Tim Riley returns in just over an hour. 4 o'clock, 5 o'clock, 6 o'clock, and 7 o'clock. You've got failure face. Did you fail?
No, I'm starting the real test right now. Crap, I don't think I paid enough attention.
Uh-oh. All right, Whitey. All right. Back after this, it's the Rick. Will Sarah pass her diversity test? You'll find out after this. Would you like to order your robe now?
One question.
We're sorry, Sarah Dillon. You have failed the diversity
test. That is the most retarded question I've ever heard.
It didn't make any sense to me. Are you done? Have you finished the test?
Yes, I finished.
You're done?
Yes, I'm done. I'm completely done. Do I have to complete the survey?
No, the one at the end, how did you, did you enjoy this test? I did. I don't know.
Excellent. In your opinion, how is your company information?
All right, that final question is the one that didn't, and I think everybody in the show is taking this now. Tim has, Scotty has, I have, you have. That question didn't make any sense to me at all.
Yeah.
There you go.
I cannot believe I failed
it twice. Sarah?
Seriously, now we're going to have to say the question on the air, and let's see how other people would answer.
Well, we don't have time. We have to do it tomorrow. Well, tomorrow we'll make. We should pick a random audience member.
We're sorry, Sarah Dillon. You failed.
We're sorry. You are a racist. Tomorrow we should pick a random audience member, and we'll have a random audience member take the CBS diversity test. Just as sort of a baseline, as like a control group. This email says, Rick, Scotty getting 100% of the fake test, but then messing up the real test is the real world equivalent of Scotty J claiming he wouldn't have a problem with his kids dating a minority, and then his reaction when his child actually brings home a minority. And then it's signed, Scotty J, may your first grandchild be a masculine child. And a mulatto. Okay. There you go.
Oh, God.
That's from a non-white person, this email that I just read. So, it's okay. It's 503-733-2970. How long till the music starts?
4 minutes.
I don't even know what I'm going to do. I got nothing. How about this? I'll read this email. Rick, I hate my job. I get phone calls forcing me to turn my radio off. When I turn it back on, I don't know what I missed. Why can't people just leave me alone and let me listen? God damn my job and the people I have to work with. Thank you, sir. That's the spirit. All right. Well, by the way, as a side note, many of you followed the trials and travails last week as we tried to get Alice Cooper on the show. So you should know that Alice Cooper was on Dennis Miller, and then Alice Cooper was, and I'm unclear about whether he canceled.
He did like every radio show in the world, but ours.
Don and Mike. Okay, here's the other thing. I just got this from our good friend Dean Snyder, who's the general sales manager here for AM 970 Solid State Radio. I'd like to thank Alice Cooper for finding time to appear on Kink FM. On Kink. Look, God love them, but seriously, F them. Kink Radio? Come on. Kink FM. This is the group email that went out from Kink FM. This is what's currently available on Kink FM podcast. It says, wow, there's a ton of stuff here. Including but not limited to the Alice Cooper interview, which I think was on Friday. Dave Scott chats with Alice Cooper about the old, what with all the Alice Cooper they play on Kink FM. That's it. I'm going to interview Nora Jones. Dave Scott chats with Alice Cooper about the old days, hanging out with John Lennon in the Rainbow Room, and a lifetime of recreational drinking paving the path for a newfound passion for golf. So, you know, you don't actually have to hear me interview Alice Cooper. You can just go to Kink, listen to them do it. It's all the same.
I thought we were over this.
No.
Are we ever going to be past this?
No. No, I'm never letting it go, because this is the second time he screwed me. God love him. I love Alice Cooper. I really do, but his people have shafted me twice now. Who else is Kink FM? Who else have they interviewed? Let's see. Samantha Mathis. Really? Ugh. Samantha Mathis, who you know as the what's-her-name, beat-me lady from Pump Up the Volume. Rutger Hauer? Come on! Kink FM interviewed Rutger Hauer? Oh, this is not right. This is just wrong. It's just wrong in so many... Hauer?
I barely knew her.
Now, that was just my computer.
You are gold today.
Shut up! You shut your mouth! Rutger Hauer! He was Blade Runner.
Because I failed the diversity.
The model for, let's see, yeah, at least I'm not a racist. All right.
I eventually passed it.
On the third try. See, it took you a while to overcome.
I honestly thought that my first answer was the right one. Okay. It was between those two, and they were both wrong.
Well, tomorrow we'll take we'll get somebody from the audience, and we'll have them take the diversity test. Rick, how long do we have until the? I want to make sure I don't start something I can't finish here. When does the music start? Oh, why? Hello. All right, we want to thank CNN Radio correspondents Jim Roop and Lisa Goddard, as well as the Oregonians' Peter Carlin. Tomorrow on the Rick Emerson Show, we'll talk to Dennis Pitzenbarger from PDXAutoClick.com and Miles Around, which is Saturday mornings, 9 to 11 right here. Rick Emerson Show produced today and every day by the lovely and only mildly bigoted Sarah X. Dillon.
Okay.
Well, I mean, you eventually got over it. For AM 970 Solid State Radio, in the newsroom, it's Tim Riley. The gatekeeper is Dave Zinn, and of course, our intrepid PA is Scotty J. Like us next. Donna Mike at 7, Stephanie Miller tomorrow 6 to 8, Dennis Miller 8 to 11. As always, don't let the masters grind you down and do try to help the retarded. We'll see you all tomorrow. Thanks for listening, kids. Bye now.
I'm Billy Newberg.